It had to. So I could find you. He kissed another tear away. And then he said to my sisters, "We have not known each other for long, but I have to believe that you were brought here, into our family for a reason too, and maybe today, we'll find out why." He surveyed them all again, and held out his hand to Cassian. Cassian took it, and held out his other for Moor. Then Moor extended her other to Asriel, Asriel to Amryn, Amryn to Nesta, Nesta to Elaine, and Elaine to me, until we were all linked, all bound together. Rhys said, "We will walk onto that field, and only accept death when it comes to haul us away to the other world. We will fight for life, for survival, for our futures. But if it is decided by that tapestry of fate or the cauldron or the mother that we do not walk off that field today." His chin lifted. "The great joy and honor of my life has been to know you, to call you my family, and I am grateful more than I can possibly say that I was given this time with you all."
"We are grateful, Rhysand," Amryn said quietly. "More than you know."
Rhys gave her a small smile as the others murmured their agreement. He squeezed my hand again as he said,
"Then let's go make Highburn very ungrateful to have known us too."
I could smell the sea long before we beheld the battlefield. Highburn had chosen well. A vast grassy plain stretched to the shore. A mile inland, he had planted his army. It rippled away, a dark mass spreading to the eastern horizon. Rocky foothills arose at his back, some of his army also stationed atop them. Indeed, even the plain seemed to slope upward to the east. I lingered at Rhysand's side atop a broad knoll overlooking the plain, my sisters Asriel and Amryn close behind. At the distant front lines far ahead, Helion, resplendent in golden armor and a rippling red cape, gave the order to halt. Armies obeyed, shifting into the positions they'd sorted out. The host we faced, though, they were waiting, poised. So many. I knew without counting that we were vastly outnumbered. Cassian landed from the skies, stone-faced, all of his siphons smoldering as he crossed the flat-topped knoll in a few steps.
"The prick took every inch of high ground and advantage he could find. If we want to rout them, we'll have to chase them up into those hills, which I have no doubt he's already calculated, likely set with all kinds of surprises."
In the distance, those Naga hounds began snarling and howling, with hunger. Rhys only asked,
"How long do you think we have?"
Cassian clenched his jaw, glancing at my sisters. Nesta was watching him keenly. Elaine monitored the army from our minor elevation, face white with dread.
"We have 5 High Lords, and there's only one of him. You all could shield us for a while, but it might not be in our best interest to drain every one of you like that. He'll have shields, too. And the cauldron. He's been careful not to let us see the full extent of his power. I have no doubt we're about to, though."
"He'll likely be using spells," I said, remembering that he'd trained Amarantha.
"Make sure Helion is on alert," Asriel offered, limping to Rhys's side. "And Theseon." "You didn't answer my question,"
Rhys said to Cassian. Cassian sized up Highburn's unending army, then our own.
"Let's say it goes badly. Shields shattered, disarray, he uses the cauldron. A few hours."
I closed my eyes. During that time, I'd have to get across the battlefield before us, find wherever he kept the cauldron, and stop it.
"My shadows are hunting for it,"
Asriel said to me, reading my face as I opened my eyes. His jaw clenched at the words. He was supposed to have been searching for it himself. He flared and settled his wings as if testing them.
But the wards are strong. No doubt reinforced by the king after you shredded through his at the camp. You might have to go on foot. Wait until the slaughter starts getting sloppy.
Cassian dipped his head and said to Amarin,
You'll know when.
She nodded sharply, crossing her arms. I wondered if she'd said goodbye to Varian. Cassian clapped Rhys on the shoulder.
On your command, I'll get the Illyrians into the skies. We advance on your signal after that.
Rhys nodded distantly, attention still fixed on that overwhelming army. Cassian took a step away but looked back at Nesta. Her face was hard as granite. He opened his mouth but seemed to decide against whatever he was about to say. My sister said nothing as Cassian shot into the sky with a powerful thrust of his wings. Yet she tracked his flight until he was hardly more than a dark speck.
I can fight on foot, Azriel said to Rhys. No.
There was no arguing with that tone. Azriel seemed like he was debating it, but Amarin shook her head in warning and he backed down, shadow coiling at his fingers. In silence, we watched our army settle into neat, solid lines. Watched the Illyrians lift into the skies at whatever silent command Rhys sent to Cassian, forming mirror lines above. Siphons glinted with color, and shields locked into place, both magical and metal. The ground itself shook with each step toward that demarcation line. Rhys said into my mind,
If Highburn has a lock on my power, he will sense me sneaking across the battlefield.
I knew what he was implying. You're needed here. If we both disappear, he'll know. A pause.
Are you afraid?
Are you? His violet eyes caught mine. So few stars now shone within them.
Yes,
he breathed.
Not for myself. For all of you.
Tarquin barked an order far ahead, and our unified army came to a halt, like some mighty beast pausing. Summer, winter, day, dawn, and night, each court's forces clearly marked by the alteration in color and armor. In the fairies who fought alongside the High Fae, ethereal and deadly. A legion of Theseus's peregrines flapped into rank beside the Illyrians, their golden armor gleaming against the solid black of our own. No sign of Baron or Eris. Not a whisper of Autumn coming to assist us. Or Tamlin. But Highburn's army did not advance. They might as well have been statues. The stillness, I knew, was more to unnerve us. Magic first, Amarin was explaining to Nesta. Both sides will try to bring down the shields around the armies. As if in answer, they did. My magic writhed in response to the High Lords unleashing their might, all but Rhysand. He was saving his power for once the shields came down. I had no doubt Highburn himself was doing the same across the plain. Shields faltered on either side. Some died. Not many, but a few. Magic against magic. The earth shuddering, the grass between the armies withering and turning to ash. I forgot how boring this is, Amarin muttered. Rhys shot her a dry look, but he prowled to the edge of our little outlook, as if sensing the stalemate was soon to break. He'd deliver a mighty, devastating blow to the army the moment their shield buckled, a veritable tidal wave of night-kissed power, his fingers curled at his sides. To my left, Azriel's siphons glowed, readying to unleash blasts to echo Rhysand's. He might not be able to fight, but he would wield his power from here. I came to Rhys's side. Ahead, both shields were wobbling at last. I never got you a mating present, I said. Rhys monitored the battle ahead. His power rumbled beneath us, surging from the shadowy heart of the world. Soon, a matter of moments. My heart thundered, sweat beading my brow, not just from the summer heat now thick across the field. "I've been thinking and thinking," I went on, "about what to get you." Slowly, so slowly, Reese's eyes slid to mine. Only a chasm of power lay within them, blotting out those stars. I smiled at him, bathing in that power, and sent an image into his mind of the column of my spine, now inked from my base to my nape with four phases of the moon, and a small star in the middle of them. "But I'll admit," I said as his eyes flared, "this mating gift is probably for both of us." Hybern's shield came crashing down. My magic snapped from me, cleaving through the world, revealing the glamour I'd had in place for hours. Before our front line, a cloud of darkness appeared, writhing and whirling on itself.
"Mother above,"
Asriel breathed, right as a male figure appeared beside that swirling ebony smoke. Both armies seemed to pause with surprise.
"You retrieved the Ouroboros," Reese whispered.
For standing before Hybern were the Bone Carver and the living nest of shadows that was Bryaxis, the former contained and freed in a fey body by myself last night, both bound to obey by the simple bargain now inked onto my spine. "I did." He scanned me from head to toe, the wind stirring his blue-black hair, and he asked softly,
"What did you see?"
Hybern was stirring, frantically assessing what and who now stood before them. The carver had chosen the form of an Illyrian soldier in his prime. Bryaxis remained within the darkness roiling around it, the living tapestry it would use to reveal the nightmares of its victims. "Myself," I said at last. "I saw myself." It was, perhaps, the one thing I would never show him. Anyone. How I had cowered and raged and wept. How I had vomited and screamed and clawed at the mirror, slammed my fists into it, and then curled up, trembling at every horrific and cruel and selfish thing I'd beheld within that monster. Within me. But I had kept watching. I did not turn from it. And when my shaking stopped, I studied it. All of those wretched things. The pride and the hypocrisy and the shame. The rage and the cowardice and the hurt. Then I began to see other things. More important things, more vital. "And what I saw," I said quietly to him as the carver raised a hand. I think I loved it, forgave it, me, all of it. It was only in that moment when I knew. I'd understood what the surreal had meant. Only I could allow the bad to break me. Only I could own it, embrace it. And when I'd learned that, the Ouroboros had yielded to me. Reese arched a brow, even as awe crept across his face.
"You loved all of it? The good and the bad?"
I smiled a bit. "Especially the bad." The two figures seemed to take a breath, a mighty inhale that had Bryaxis's dark cloud contracting, ready to spring. I inclined my head to my mate. "Here's to a long, happy mating, Reese."
"Seems like you beat me to it."
"To what?" With a wink, Reese pointed toward Bryaxis and the carver. Another figure appeared. The carver stumbled back a step, and I knew. From the slim, female figure, the dark, flowing hair, the once again beautiful face, I knew who she was. Striga, the weaver. And atop the weaver's dark hair, a pale blue jewel
glittered. Ianthe's jewel.
A blood trophy, as the weaver smiled at her twin, gave him a mocking bow, and faced the host before them. The carver halted his slow retreat, stared at his sister for a long moment, then turned to the army once more.
You're not the only one who can offer bargains, you know,
Rhys drawled with a wicked smile. The weaver. Rhys had gotten the weaver to join us. How?
He angled his neck, revealing a small, curling tattoo behind his ear.
I sent Helion to bargain on my behalf. That was why he was in the middle that day he found you. To offer to break the containment spell on the weaver. In exchange, for her services today.
I blinked at my mate. Then grinned, not bothering to hide the savagery within it. Highburn has no idea about the hell that's about to rain down upon them, do they?
Here's to family reunions,
was all Rhys said. Then, the weaver, the carver, and Bryaxis unleashed themselves upon Highburn. Chapter 70.
You actually did it,
Amryn murmured, gaping as the three immortals slammed into Highburn's lines and the screaming began. Bodies fell before them. Bodies were left in their wake, some mere husks encased in armor, drained by the carver and Striga. Some fled from what they beheld in Bryaxis, the face of their deepest fears.
Rhys was still smiling at me as he extended a hand toward Highburn's army, now trying to adjust to the rampant havoc. His fingers pointed. Obsidian power erupted from him. A massive chunk of Highburn's army just misted. Red mist and metal shavings lay where they had been. Rhys panted, his eyes a bit wild. The hit had been well placed, splitting the army in two. Azrael unleashed a second blast, blue light slamming into the now exposed flank, driving them farther apart. The Illyrians moved. That had been Rhys's signal. They shot down from the skies, just as a legion rose up from Highburn teeming with things like the Adar. Hidden amongst Highburn's ranks, siphons flared, locking shields into place, and the Illyrians rained arrows with deadly accuracy. But the Adar Legion was well prepared, and when they answered with a volley of their own, ash shafts, but arrowheads made from Faebane. Even with Nuon's antidote in our soldiers' veins, it did not extend to their magic, and it was no defense against the stone itself. Faebane arrows pierced siphon shields as easily as butter. The king had adapted, improved his arsenal. Some Illyrians went down quickly. The others realized the threat and used their metal shields, unhooking them from across their backs. On land, Tarquin's, Helion's, and Calias's soldiers began to charge. Highburn unleashed its hounds and other beasts. And as those two sides barreled for each other, Rhys sent another blast, followed by a wave of power from Tarquin, splitting and shoving Highburn's lines into uneven groups. And through it all, Bryaxis, all I could make of it was a blur of ever-changing claws and fangs and wings and muscle, shifting and whirling within that dark cloud that struck and smothered. Blood sprayed wherever it plunged into screaming soldiers. Some seemed to die of pure terror. The bone carver fought near Bryaxis. No weapons to be seen beyond a scimitar of ivory, of bone, in that male's hands. He swept it before him as if he were threshing wheat. Soldiers dropped dead before it, with barely a blow laid upon them. Even that fey body of his could not contain that lethal power, stifle it. Highburn fled before him, before the weaver. For on the other side of the carver, leaving husks of corpses in her wake, Striga shredded through Highburn in a tangle of black hair and white limbs. Our own soldiers, mercifully, did not balk as they ran for the army lines, and I sent a roaring order down that two-pronged bond that now linked me to the Carver and Bryaxis, reminding them, my teeth gritted, that our soldiers were not fair game. Only Highburn and its allies. Both raged against the order, yanking at the leash. I rallied every scrap of night and starlight and snarled at them to obey. I could have sworn an otherworldly, ungodly sense of self grumbled about it in response, but they listened and did not turn on our soldiers who at last intercepted Highburn's lines. The sound, as both armies collided, I didn't have words for it. Elaine covered her ears, cringing. My friends were down there. Moore fought with Vivian, keeping an eye on her as she promised Calais, while he released his power in sprays of skin-shredding ice. Cassian, I couldn't even spot him beyond the blazing flare of his siphons near the front lines, crimson glowing amid the vicious shadows of Kier's Darkbringers as they wielded them to their advantage, blinding swaths of Highburn soldiers in sudden darkness, then blinding them doubtly when they ripped those shadows away and left nothing but glaring sunlight, left nothing but their awaiting blades. It's already getting messy, Amryn said. Even though our lines, especially the Illyrians and Theson's Peregrines, held. Not yet, Rhys said. Much of the army isn't yet engaged past the front lines. We need Highburn's focus elsewhere. Starting with Rhys setting foot on that battlefield. My guts twisted up. Highburn's army began to move, pressing ahead. The Weaver, Carver, and Bryaxis plunged deep into the ranks, but Highburn's soldiers quickly stepped up to staunch the holes in the lines. Helion bellowed at our front lines to hold steady. Arrows rose and fell on either side. The ones tipped in Fabane found their mark, over and over again, as if the king had spelled them to hunt their targets. This will be over before we can even walk down this hill, Amryn snapped. Rhys growled at her. Not yet. A horn sounded. To the north. Both armies seemed to pause to look, and Rhys only breathed to me. Now. You have to go now. Because the army that broke over the northern horizon. Three armies. One bearing the burnt orange flag of Baron. The other, the grass-green flag of the Spring Court. And one of mortal men in iron armor, bearing a cobalt flag with a striking badger. Grayson's crest. Out of a rip in the world, Eris appeared atop our knoll, clad head to toe in silver armor, a red cape spilling from his shoulders. Rhys snarled a warning, too far gone in his power to bother controlling himself. Eris just rested a hand on the pommel of his fine sword and said,
We thought you might need some help.
Because Tamlin's small army, and Baron's, and Grayson's, now they were running and winnowing and blasting for Highburn's ranks, and leading that human army? Jurian. But Baron. Baron had come. Eris registered our shock at that, too, and said,
Tamlin made him. Dragged my father out by his neck.
A half-smile.
It was delightful.
They had come, and Tamlin had managed to rally that force I'd so gleefully destroyed.
Tamlin wants orders,
Eris said.
Jurian does, too.
Rhys's voice was rough, low.
And what of your father? We're taking care of a problem,
was all Eris said, and pointed toward his father's army. For those were his brothers approaching the front line, winnowing in bursts through the host, right past the front lines and to the enemy wagons scattered throughout Highburn's ranks. Wagons full of Fabane, I realized, as they crackled with blue fire and then turned to ash without even a trace of smoke. His brothers winnowed to every cache, every arsenal. Flames exploded in their path, destroying that supply of Fabane, burning it into nothing, as if someone, Jurian or Tamlin, had told them precisely where each would be. Rhys blinked, his only sign of surprise. He looked to me, then Amarin, and nodded. Go. Now. While Hybern was focused on the approaching army, trying to calculate the risks, to staunch the chaos Baron and his sons unleashed with their targeted attacks, trying to figure out what the hell Jurian was doing there, and how many weaknesses Jurian had learned and would now exploit. Amarin ushered my sisters forward, even as Elaine let out a low sob at the sight of the Grayson coat of arms. Now, quick and quiet as shadows, we were going down. Into that. Phryaxis and the Carver were still shredding, still slaughtering in their little pockets past the enemy lines. And the Weaver? Where was the Weaver? There, slowly plowing a slim path of carnage, as Rhys had instructed her moments before. This way, I said to them, keeping an eye on Striga's path of horror. Elaine was shaking, still gazing toward that human army and her betrothed in it. Nesta monitored the Illyrian Legion soaring past overhead, their lines unfaltering. I assume we'll be following the path of bodies, Amarin muttered to me. How does the Weaver know how to find the cauldron? Rhys seemed to be listening, even as we turned away, his fingers brushing mine in silent farewell. I just said, because she appears to have an unnaturally good sense of smell. Amarin snorted, and we fell into flanking positions around my sisters. A glamour of invisibility would hopefully allow us to skirt the southern edge of the battlefield, along with Azrael's shadow as he monitored from behind. But once we got behind enemy lines, I looked back as we neared the edge of the knoll, just once, at Rhys, where he now stood talking to Azrael and Eris, explaining the plan to relay to Tamlin, Baron, and Jurian. Eris's brothers made it back behind their father's lines, fires now burning throughout Hybern's army. Not enough to stop them, but at least the Fabane had been dealt with. For now. Rhys's attention slid to me, and even with the battle around us, hell unleashing everywhere, for a heartbeat, we were the only two people on this plane. I opened my mental barriers to speak to him. Just one more farewell. One more. Nesta inhaled a shuddering gasp, stumbled and took down Amarin with her when she tried to keep her upright. Rhys was instantly there, before the understanding dawned upon me. The cauldron. Hybern was rousing the cauldron. Amarin squirmed out from beneath Nesta, whirling toward the battlefield. Shields! Eris winnowed away, to warn his father, no doubt. Nesta pushed herself onto her elbows, hair shaking free of her braid, lips bloodless. She heaved into the grass. Rhys's magic shot out of him, arcing around our entire army, his breathing a wet rasp. Nesta's hands grappled into the grass as she lifted her head, scanning the horizon, like she could see right to where the cauldron was now about to be unleashed. Rhys's power flowed and flowed out of him, bracing for impact. Azrael's siphons flashed, a sprawling shield of cobalt locking over Rhysand's, his breathing just as heavy as my mate's. And then Nesta began screaming. Not in pain, but a name. Over and over. Cassian! Amarin reached for her, but Nesta roared, Cassian! She scrambled to her feet as if she'd leap into the skies. Her body lurched and she went down again, heaving again. A figure shot from the Illyrian ranks, spearing for us, flapping hard, red siphons blazing. Nesta moaned, writhing on the ground. The earth seemed to shudder in response. No, not in response to her. In terror of the thing that erupted from Hybern's army. I understood why the king had claimed those rocky foothills. Not to make us charge uphill if we could push them so far, but to position the cauldron. for it was from the rocky outcropping that a battering ram of death white light hurled for our army. Just about level with the Illyrian Legion in the sky, as the Adder's Legion dropped to the earth and ducked for cover, leaving the Illyrians exposed. Cassian was halfway to us when the cauldron's blast hit the Illyrian forces. I saw him scream, but heard nothing. The force of that power. It shredded Azrael's shield, then Rhysand's, and then shredded any siphon-made ones. It hollowed out my ears and seared my face, and where 1,000 soldiers had been a heartbeat before, ashes rained down upon our foot soldiers. Nesta had known. She gaped up at me, terror and agony on her face, then scanned the sky for Cassian, who flapped in place as if torn between coming for us and charging back to the scattering Illyrian and Peregrine ranks. She'd known where the blast was about to hit. Cassian had been right in the center of it, or would have been, if she hadn't called him away. Rhys was looking at her like he knew too, like he didn't know whether to scold her for the guilt Cassian would no doubt feel, or thank her for saving him. Nesta's body went stiff again. A low moan was breaking from her. I felt Rhys cast out his power, a silent warning signal. The other High Lords raised shields this time, backing the one he rallied. But the cauldron did not hit the same spot twice, and Hybern was willing to incinerate part of his own army if it meant wiping out a strength of ours. Cassian was again hurtling for us, for Nesta sprawled on the ground as the light and unholy heat of the cauldron were unleashed again, right into its own lines, where the bone carver was gleefully shredding apart soldiers, draining the life from them in sweeps and gusts of that deadly wind. An unearthly female shriek broke from deep in the Hybern forces. A sister's warning and pain, just as that white light slammed into the bone carver. But the carver, I could have sworn he looked toward me as the cauldron's power crashed into him. Could have sworn he smiled, and it was not a hideous thing at all. There and gone. The cauldron wiped him away without any sign of effort. Chapter 71. I could barely hear, barely think in the wake of the cauldron's power. In the wake of the empty, blasted pit of plain where the carver had been, the sudden cold that shuddered down my spine as if erasing the tattoo inked upon it. And then the silence. Silence in some pocket of my mind, as a section of that two-pronged leash of control faded into darkness without end, leaving nothing behind. I wondered who would carve his death in the prison. If he had perhaps already carved it for himself on the walls of that cell. If he had wanted to make sure I was worthy, not to taunt me, but because he wanted his end. He wanted his end to be worth carving. And as I gazed at that decimated part of the plain, the ashes of the Illyrian still raining down, I wondered if the carver had made it to wherever he had been so curious about going. I sent up a quiet prayer for him, for all the soldiers who had been there and were now ash on the wind, sent up a prayer that they found it everything they'd hoped it would be. It was the Illyrians who drew me out of the quiet, the ringing in my ears. Even as our army began to panic in the wake of the cauldron's might, the remaining bulk of the Illyrian legions reformed their lines and charged ahead, Theson's peregrines wholly interspersed with them now. Jurian's human army, made up of Grayson's men and others. To their credit, they did not falter, did not break, even as they went down one by one. If the cauldron dealt another blow. Nesta had her brow in the grass as Cassian landed so hard the ground shuddered. He was reaching for her as he panted.
What is it? What?
It's gone quiet again, Nesta breathed, letting Cassian haul her into a sitting position as he scanned her face. Devastation and rage lay in his own. Did he know? That she had screamed for him, knowing he'd come? That she'd done it to save him? Rhys only ordered him,
"Get back in line. The soldiers need you there."
Cassian bared his teeth.
"What the hell can we do against that?"
"I'm going in," Asriel said.
"No,"
Rhys snapped. But Asriel was spreading his wings, the sunlight so stark on the new slashing scars down the membrane.
"Chain me to a tree, Rhys," Asriel said softly. "Go ahead."
He began checking the buckles on his weapons.
"I'll rip it out of the ground and fly with it on my damned back."
Rhys just stared at him, the wings, then the decimated Illyrian forces. Any chance we had of victory? Nesta wasn't going anywhere, she could barely stay sitting. And Elaine? Amryn was holding Elaine upright as she vomited in the grass. Not from the cauldron, but pure terror. But if we didn't stop the cauldron before it refilled again, we'd be gone within a few more strikes. I met Amryn's gaze. Can it be done? With just me? Her eyes narrowed.
Maybe.
A pause.
Maybe. It never specified how many. Between the two of us, it could be enough.
I eased to my feet. The view of the battle was so much worse standing. Helion, Tarquin, and Kalia struggled to hold our lines. Jurian, Tamlin, and Baron still battered the northern flank while the Illyrians and Peregrine slammed back the Aerial Legion. Kyr's Darkbringers now little more than wisps of shadow amid the chaos. But it was not enough. And Hybern's sheer size. It was beginning to push us back. Beginning to overwhelm us. Even by the time Amryn and I crossed the miles of battlefield, what would be left? Who would be left? There was another horn then.
I knew it did not belong to any ally.
Just as I knew Highburn had not only picked this battlefield for its physical advantages, but geographical ones. Because toward the sea, sailing out of the west, out of Highburn, an armada appeared. So many ships, all teeming with soldiers. I caught the look between Cassian, Asriel, and Rhys as they beheld the other army sailing in. At our backs. Not another army. The rest of Highburn's army. We were trapped between them. Amryn swore. We might need to run, Rhysand, before they make landfall. We could not fight both armies. Couldn't even fight one. Rhys turned to me.
If you can get across that battlefield in time, then do it. Try to stop the army, the king. But if you can't, when it all goes to hell, when there are none of us left.
Don't, I begged him. Don't say it.
I want you to run. I don't care what it costs. You run. Get far away and live to fight another day. You don't look back.
I began to shake my head. You said no goodbyes.
Asriel,
Rhys said quietly, hoarsely.
You lead the remaining Illyrians on the northern flank.
Guilt. Guilt and fear rippled in my mate's eyes at the command, knowing that Asriel was not fully healed. Asriel didn't give Rhys a chance to reconsider. Didn't say goodbye to any of us.
He shot into the sky. Those still healing wings beating hard as they carried him toward the scrambling northern flank.
That armada sailed nearer. Highburn, sensing their reinforcements were soon to make landfall, cheered and paused. Hard, so hard, the Illyrian lines buckled. Asriel sailed closer and closer to them, siphons trailing tendrils of blue flame in his wake. Rhys watched him for a moment. Throat bobbing before he said,
Cassian, you take the southern flank.
This was it. The last moments. The last time I would see them all.
I wouldn't run.
If it all went to hell, I would make it count and use my own last breath to get that army and king wiped off the earth. But right now, Highburn's armada sailed directly for the distant beach. If I didn't go now, I'd have to charge right through them. The Weaver was already slowing on the eastern front, her death dance hindered by too many enemies. Bryaxis continued to shred through the lines, swathes of the dead in its wake. But it was still not enough. All that planning, it was still not enough. Cassian said to Rhys, to me, to Nesta,
"I'll see you on the other side."
I knew he didn't mean the battlefield. His wings shifted, readying to lift him.
A horn blast cleaved the world. A dozen horns lifted in perfect, mighty harmony.
Rhys went still, utterly still at the sound of those horns from the distance. From the east. From the sea. He whipped his head to me, grabbed me by the waist, and hauled me into the sky. A heartbeat later, Cassian was beside us, Nesta in his arms, as if she'd demanded to see. And there, sailing over the eastern horizon, I did not know where to look. At the winged soldiers, thousands upon thousands of them, flying straight toward us high above the ocean, or the armada of ships stretching away beneath them. More than Highburn's armada. Far, far more. I knew who they were the moment the aerial host's white feathered wings became clear. The Seraphim. Draken's Legion. And in those ships below? So many different ships. 1,000 ships from countless nations, it seemed. Miriam's people. But the other ships? Out of the clouds, a tan-skinned, dark-haired Seraphim warrior soared for us. And Rhys's choked laugh was enough to tell me who it was, who now flapped before us, grinning broadly.
"You could have asked for aid, you know,"
drawled the male. "Draken.
Instead of letting us hear of all this through the rumor mill, seems we arrived just in time."
"We came looking for you, and found you gone," Rhys said, but those were tears in his eyes.
"Makes it hard to ask someone for aid."
Draken snorted.
"Yes, we realized that. Miriam figured it out, why we hadn't heard from you yet."
His white wings were almost blindingly bright in the sun.
3 centuries ago, we had some trouble on our borders and set up a glamour to keep the island shielded, tied to, you know, so that anyone who approached would only see a ruin and be inclined to turn around.
He winked at Rhys.
"Miriam's idea. She got it from you and your city."
Draken winced a bit.
"Turns out it worked too well if it kept out both enemies and friends."
"You mean to tell me," Rhys said softly, "that you've been on Cretea this entire time?" Draken grimaced.
"Yes, until we heard about Highburn, about Miriam being hunted again."
"By Jurian." The prince's face tightened with rage, but he surveyed me, then Nesta and Cassian with a sharp-eyed scrutiny.
"Shall we assist you or just flap here talking?"
Rhys inclined his head.
"At your leisure, prince."
He glanced to the armada now aiming for Highburn's forces.
"Friends of yours?"
Draken's mouth quirked to the side.
"Friends of yours, I think."
My heart stopped.
"Some of Miriam's boats are down there. She's with them, but most of that came for you."
"What?" Nesta said sharply, not quite a question. Draken pointed to the ships.
"We met up with them on the flight here, saw them crossing the channel, and decided to join ranks. It's why we're a little late, though we gave them a bit of a push across."
Indeed, wind was now whipping at their white sails, propelling those boats faster and faster toward that Highburn armada. Draken rubbed his jaw.
"I can't even begin to explain the convoluted story they told me, but..."
He shook his head.
They're led by a queen named Vasa.
I began crying.
Who apparently was found by...
Lucian, I breathed.
Who?
Draken's brows narrowed.
Oh, the male with the eye. No, he met up with them later on, told them where to go. To come now, actually. So pushy, you Prithian males. Good thing we, at last, were already on our way to see if you needed help.
Who found Vasa? Nesta said with that same flat tone, as if she somehow already knew. Closer. Those human ships sailed. So many. So many, bearing a variety of different flags that I could just start to make out, thanks to my fey sight.
He calls himself the Prince of Merchants,
Draken said.
Apparently, he discovered the human queens were traitors months ago, and has been gathering an independent human army to face Highburn ever since. He managed to find Queen Vasa, and together they rallied this army.
Draken shrugged.
He told me that he's got 3 daughters who live here, and that he failed them for many years, but he would not fail them this time.
The ships at the front of the human armada became clear, along with the gold lettering on their sides.
He named his 3 personal ships after them,
Draken said with a smile. And there, sailing at the front, I beheld the names of those ships. The Feyre, the Elaine,
and leading the charge against Highburn, flying over the waves, unyielding and without 1 ounce of fear, the Nesta.
With my father, our father, at the helm. Chapter 72. The wind whipped away the tears rolling down Nesta's face at the sight of our father's ships. At the sight of the ship he'd chosen to sail into battle. For the daughter who had hated him for not fighting for us. Who had hated him for our mother dying. For the poverty and the despair and years lost. Draken said dryly,
I take it you're acquainted?
Our father, gone for months and months with no word. He had left, my sisters had once said, to attend a meeting regarding the threat above the wall. At that meeting, had it become clear that we had been betrayed by our own kind? And had he then departed, under such secrecy he would not risk the messages to us falling into the wrong hands, to find help? For us? For me and my sisters? Rhys said to Draken,
Meet Nesta, and my mate, Feyre.
Neither of us looked to the prince. Only at our father's fleet, at the ships he'd named in honor of us.
Speaking of Vasa,
Rhys said to Draken,
was her curse ended?
The human armada and the Highburn host neared, and I knew the impact would be lethal. Saw Highburn's magic shields go up. Saw the Seraphim raise their own.
See for yourself,
Draken said. I blinked at what began to shoot between the human boats. What soared over the water, fast as a shooting star, spearing for Highburn. Red and gold and white, vibrant as molten metal. I could have sworn Highburn's fleet began to panic as it broke from the lines of the human armada and closed the gap between them. As it spread its wings wide, trailing sparks and embers across the waves, and I realized what, who, now flew at that enemy host. A firebird, burning as hot and furious as the heart of a forge. Vasa, the lost queen. Rhys kissed away the tears sliding down my own face as that firebird queen slammed into Highburn's fleet. Burning husks of ships were left in her wake. Our father and the human army spread wide to pick off the others. Rhys said to Draken,
Get your legion on land.
A slim chance. A fool's chance of winning this thing. Or staunching the slaughter. Draken's eyes went glazed in a way that told me he was conveying orders to someone far away.
I wondered if Nefel and her wife were in that legion. If the last time they had drawn swords was that long-ago battle at the bottom of the sea. Rhys seemed to be thinking of the past, too, because he muttered to Draken over the din exploding off the sea and the battle below. Jurian is here. The casual, cocky grace of the prince vanished. Cold rage hardened his features into something terrifying, and his brown eyes, they went wholly black. He fights for us. Draken didn't look convinced, but he nodded. He jerked his chin to Cassian.
I assume you're Cassian?
The general's chin dipped. I could already see the shadows in his eyes at the loss of those soldiers.
My legion is yours. Command them as you like.
Cassian scanned our foundering host, the northern flank that Asriel was reassembling, and gave Draken a few terse orders. Draken flapped those white wings, so stark against his honey-brown skin, and said to Rhys,
Miriam's furious with you, by the way. 351 years since you last visited. If we survive, expect to do some groveling.
Rhys rasped a laugh.
Tell that witch it goes both ways.
Draken grinned, and with a powerful sweep of his wings, he was gone. Rhys and Cassian looked after him, then at the armadas now engaged in outright bloodshed. Our father was down there. Our father, who I had never seen wield a weapon in his life. The Firebird rained hell upon the ships. Literally, burning molten hell as she slammed into them and sent their panicking soldiers to the bottom of the sea. Now, I said to Rhys, Amryn and I need to go now. The chaos was complete. With a battle raging in every direction, Amryn and I could make it. Perhaps the king would be preoccupied. Rhys made to shoot me back down to the ground where Amryn and Elaine were still waiting. Nesta said,
Wait.
Rhys obeyed. Nesta stared toward that armada, toward our father fighting in it.
Use me as bait.
I blinked at the same moment Cassian said,
No.
Nesta ignored him.
The king is probably waiting beside that cauldron. Even if you get there, you'll have him to contend with. Draw him out. Draw him far away. To me.
How? Rhys said softly.
It goes both ways, Nesta murmured, as if my mate's words moments before had triggered the idea. He doesn't know how much I took, and if I can make it seem like I'm about to use his power, he'll come running, just to kill me.
He will kill you,
Cassian snarled. Her hand clenched on his arm.
That's where you come in.
To guard her, protect her, to lay a trap for the king.
No,
Rhys said. Nesta snorted.
You're not my High Lord. I may do as I wish. And since he'll sense that you're with me, you need to go far away too.
Rhys said to Cassian,
I'm not letting you throw your life away for this.
I was inclined to agree. Cassian surveyed the depleted Illyrian lines, now holding strong as Asriel rallied them.
As has control of the lines. I said no,
Rhys snapped. I'd never heard him use that tone with Cassian.
With any of them.
Cassian said steadily,
It's the only shot we have of a diversion, luring him away from that cauldron.
His hands tightened on Nesta.
You gave everything, Rhys. You went through hell for us, for 50 years.
He'd never addressed it, not fully.
You think I don't know what happened? I know, Rhys, we all do. And we know you did it to save us. Spare us.
He shook his head, sunlight glinting off that dark winged helmet.
Let us return the favor.
Let us repay the debt.
There is no debt to repay.
Rhys's voice broke. The sound of it cracked my heart.
Cassian's own voice broke as he said,
I never got to repay your mother for her kindness. Let me do it this way. Let me buy you time.
I can't.
I wasn't sure if in the entire history of Illyria there had ever been such a discussion.
You can,
Cassian said gently.
You can, Rhys.
He gave a lazy grin.
Save some of the glory for the rest of us.
Cassian.
But Cassian asked Nesta,
Do you have what you need?
Nesta nodded.
Amryn showed me enough, what to do to rally the power to me. And if Amryn and I could control the cauldron between us, that distraction they'd offer.
Nesta looked down to Elaine, our sister monitoring the bloodbath ahead. Then to me. She said quietly, Tell Father, thank you. She wrapped her arms tightly around Cassian, those gray-blue eyes bright. Then they were gone.
Rhys's body strained with the effort of not going after them, as they soared for a copse of trees far behind the battlefield.
He might survive, I said softly.
No,
Rhys said, flying us down to Amryn and Elaine.
He won't.
I had Rhys move Elaine to the farthest reaches of our camp, and when he returned, my mate only pressed a kiss to my mouth before he took to the skies, spearing for the heart of the battle, the heaviest fighting. I could barely stand to look, to see where he landed. Alone with Amryn, she said to me,
Shield us from sight and run as fast as you can. Don't stop. Try not to kill. It'll leave a trail.
I nodded, checking my weapons.
The Seraphim were soaring overhead now, wings bright as the sun on snow.
I settled a glamour around us, veiling us and muffling our sounds.
Quickly, Amryn repeated, silver eyes churning like thunderclouds. Don't look back.
So I didn't. Chapter 73 The cauldron had been nestled in a craggy overlook. The weaver had done her job well. Key guards and posts were little more than wet, red piles of bone and sinew. And I knew that when I saw her again, she would be even more blindingly beautiful. Amryn's power flared again and again, breaking through wards in our path until we reached Striga's wake. Whatever spells the king had laid, Amryn was prepared for them, hungry for them. She shattered them all with a savage smile. But the Grey Hill was crawling with Hybern commanders, content to let their underlings fight, waiting until the killing field had sorted the grunts from the true warriors. I could hear them hissing about who on our side they wanted to personally take on. Helion and Tarquin were two of the most frequent wishes. Tamlin was the other. Tamlin for his two-faced lying. And Jurian. How they would suffer. Varian, Azriel, Cassian, Kalias, and Vivian. More. They said the names of my friends like they were horses at a race. Who would last long enough for them to face off? Who would haul the pretty mate of the Lord of Winter back here? Who would break the Morrigan at last? Who would bring home Illyrian wings to pin on the wall? My blood was boiling, even as my bones quaked. I hoped Bryaxis devoured them all, and made them wet themselves in terror before it did. But I dared look behind us once. Mor and Vivian weren't coming to this camp anytime soon. They held off an entire cluster of Hybern soldiers, flanked by that white-haired female I'd seen in the winter camp, and a unit of those mighty bears that shredded apart soldiers with swipes of their enormous paws. Amryn hissed a warning, and I faced forward
as we began to scale the quiet side of the Gray Hill. No sign of Striga, though she had stopped here, at the base of the hill atop which the cauldron squatted. I could already feel its terrible presence, the beckoning. Amryn and I climbed slowly, listening after every step. The battle raged behind us, in the skies and on the earth and in the sea. I didn't think, even with Draken and the human army, I did not think it was going well. My hands bit into the sharp gray rock of the hill's cliff face, body straining as I hauled myself up, Amryn climbing with ease. Nesta had to lure the king away soon, or we'd be face to face with him. Movement at the base of the rock caught my attention. I went still as death. A beautiful, dark-haired young woman stood there, staring up at us, squinting and sniffing. A smile bloomed on her red, her bloody mouth. She smiled in my general direction, revealing blood-coated teeth. Striga. The weaver had waited, hiding here, until we arrived. She brushed a snow-white hand over the tattoo of a crescent moon now on her forearm. Reese's bargain mark. A reminder and warning. To go. To hurry. She faced the rocky path half visible to our left, Ianthe's jewel splattered with blood where it sat atop her head. Strode right to the guard stationed there, who we'd been climbing the cliff face to avoid. Some of them jolted. Striga smiled once, a hateful, awful smile, and leaped upon them. A diversion. Amryn shuddered, but we launched into motion once more. The guards were focused on her slaughtering, sprinting from their posts up the hill to meet her. Faster. We didn't have much time. I could feel the cauldron rallying. No, not the cauldron. That power... It came from behind. Nesta. Good girl, Amryn muttered under her breath, just before she grabbed me by the back of my jacket and slammed me face first into the stone, ducking low. Right as a pair of boots strolled down the narrow path. I knew the sound of his footsteps. They haunted my dreams. The King of Highburn walked right past us, focused on Striga, on Nesta's distant rumble of power. The weaver paused as she beheld who approached, smiled, blood dripping off her chin. How beautiful you are, he murmured, his voice a seductive croon. How magnificent, ancient one. She brushed her dark hair over a slim shoulder.
You may bow, king. As it was once done.
The King of Highburn walked right up to her, smiled down at Striga's exquisite face. Then he took that face in his broad hands, faster than she could move, and snapped her neck. It might not have killed her. The weaver was a death god. Her very existence defied our own. So it might not have killed her, that cracking of her spine. Had the king not tossed her body down to the two Naga hounds snarling at the foot of the hill? They ripped into the weaver's limp body without hesitation. Even Amryn let out a sound of dismay. But the king was staring northward, toward Nesta. That power, her power, surged again, beckoning, as the cauldron atop this rock now called to me. He gazed toward the sea, the battle raging there. I could have sworn he was smiling as he winnowed away.
Now, Amryn breathed.
I couldn't move.
Cassian and Nesta. Even Rhys thought there was no shot of survival.
You make it count, Amryn snapped. And that was true grief shining in her eyes. She knew what was about to happen. The window that we'd been bought. I swallowed my despair, my terror, and charged up the hill, to the crag, to where the cauldron sat, unguarded. waiting for us. The book appeared in Amryn's small hands. The cauldron was nearly as tall as she was, a looming black pit of hate and power. I could stop this. Right now, stop this army and the king before he killed Nesta and Cassian. Amryn opened the book, looked at me expectantly. "Put your hand on the cauldron," she said quietly. I obeyed. The cauldron's endless power slammed into me, a wave threatening to sweep me under, a storm with no end. I could barely keep one foot in this world, barely remember my name. I clung to what I had seen in the Ouroboros, clung to every reflection and memory I had faced and owned, the good and wicked and the gray. Who I was. Who I was. Who I was. Amryn watched me for a long moment and did not read from the book, did not put it in my hands. She shut the gold pages and shoved it behind her with a kick. Amryn had lied. She didn't plan to leash the king or his army with the cauldron and the book. And whatever trap she had set, I had fallen right into it. Chapter 74. I gripped my sense of self in the face of the black maw of the cauldron. Gripped it with everything I had. Amryn only said, "I'm sorry I lied to you." I could not remove my hand. Could not pry my fingers away. I was being shredded apart, slowly, thoroughly. I flung my magic out, desperate for any chain to this world to save me, keep me from being devoured by the eternal, awful thing that now tried to drag me into its embrace. Fire and water and light and wind and ice and night all rallied. All failed me. Some tether slipped, and my mind slid closer to the cauldron's outstretched arms. I felt it touch me, and then I was half gone. Half there, standing silently next to the cauldron, hand glued to the black rim, half elsewhere, flying through the world, searching. The cauldron now hunted for that power that had come so close, and now taunted it. Nesta. The cauldron searched for her. Searched for her as the king now sought her. It skimmed across the battlefield like an insect over the surface of a pond. We were losing. Badly. Seraphim and Illyrians were bloodied at being hauled out of the sky. Azrael had been forced to the ground, his wings dragging in the bloody mud as he fought sword to sword against the endless onslaught. Our foot soldiers had broken the line in places, Kyr screaming at his Darkbringers to get back into position, plumes of shadows flaring from him. I saw Rhysand, in the thick of those breaking lines, blood-splattered, fighting beautifully. I saw him assess the field ahead. And transform. The talons came first, replacing fingers and feet. The dark scales, or perhaps feathers, I couldn't get a look at them, covered his legs, his arms, his chest. His body contorted, bones and muscles growing and shifting. The beast form Rhys had kept hidden. Never liked to unleash, unless it was dire enough to do so. Before the cauldron swept me away, I beheld what happened to his head, his face. It was a thing of nightmares. Nothing human or fey in it. It was a creature that lived in black pits and only emerged at night to hunt and feast. The face? It was those creatures that had been carved into the rock of the Court of Nightmares, that made up his throne. The throne not only a representation of his power, but of what lurked within. And with the wings,
Hybern soldiers began fleeing. Helion beheld what happened and ran too, but toward Rhys, shifting as well. If Rhys was flying terror crafted from shadows and cold moonlight, Helion was his daytime equivalent. Gold feathers and shredding claws and feathered wings. Together, my mate and the High Lord of Day unleashed themselves upon Hybern. Until they paused. Until a slim, short male walked out of the ranks toward them. One of Hybern's commanders, no doubt. Rhys's snarl shook the earth. But it was Helion, glowing with white light, who stepped forward to face the male, claws sinking deep into the mud. The commander didn't so much as wear a sword, only fine gray clothes and a vaguely amused expression on his face. Amethyst light swirled around him. Helion growled at Rhys, an order, and my mate nodded, gore dripping from his maw, before he lunged back into the fray, leaving the commander and Helion Spellcleaver to go head to head, spell to spell. Soldiers on either side began fleeing, but the cauldron whipped me away as Helion unleashed a blast of light toward the commander, its quarry not to be found on that battlefield. Come, Nesta's power seemed to sing. Come. The cauldron caught her scent and hurtled us onward. We arrived before the king did. The cauldron seemed to skid to a halt at the clearing, seemed to coil and reel back, a snake poised to strike. Nesta and Cassian stood there, his sword out, Nesta's eyes blazing with that inner unholy fire. Get ready, she breathed. He's coming. The power Nesta was holding back. She'd kill the king of Hybern. Cassian was the distraction, while her blow found its mark. Time seemed to slow and warp. The dark power of the king speared toward us, toward that clearing where I was neither seen nor heard, where I was nothing but a scrap of soul carried on a black wind. The king of Hybern winnowed right in front of them. Nesta's power rallied, then vanished. Cassian did not move, did not dare. For the king of Hybern held my father before him, a sword to his throat. That was why he had looked to the sea. He'd known Nesta would land that killing blow the moment he appeared, and the only way to stop it, a human shield. One she'd think twice about allowing to die. Our father was blood-splattered, leaner than the last time I'd seen him. Nesta, he breathed, noting the ears, the fey grace, the power sputtering out in her eyes. The king smiled. What a loving father, to bring an entire army to save his daughters. Nesta didn't say anything. Cassian's attention darted through the clearing, sizing up every advantage, every angle. Save him, I begged the cauldron of my father. Help him. The cauldron did not answer. It had no voice. No consciousness, save some base need to take back that which had been stolen. The king of Hybern tilted his head to peer at my father's bearded and weather-tanned face. So many things have changed since you were last home. Three daughters, now fey. One of them married quite well. My father only gazed at my sister, ignored the monster behind him, and said to her, I loved you from the first moment I held you in my arms, and I am so sorry, Nesta. My Nesta, I am so sorry for all of it.
Please,
Nesta said to the king. Her only word, guttural and hoarse. Please.
What will you give me, Nesta Archeron?
Nesta stared and stared at my father, who was shaking his head. Cassian's hand twitched, the blade rising, trying to get a good shot.
Will you give back what you took?
Yes.
Even if I have to carve it out of you?
Our father snarled.
Don't you lay your filthy hands on my daughter!
I heard the crack before I realized what happened. Before I saw the way my father's head twisted, saw the light freeze in his eyes. Nesta made no sound, showed no reaction as the king of Highburn snapped our father's neck. I began screaming. Screaming and thrashing inside the cauldron's grip, begging it to stop it, to bring him back, to end it. Nesta looked down at my father's body as it crumpled to the forest floor. And as the king had predicted, Nesta's power flickered out. But Cassian's had not. Arrows of blinding red shot for the king of Highburn, a shield locking around Nesta as Cassian launched himself forward. And as Cassian took on the king, who laughed and seemed willing to engage in a bit of swordplay, I stared at my father on that ground, at his open, unseeing eyes. Cassian pushed the king away from my father's body, swords and magics clashing. Not for long, only long enough to hold him off, for Nesta to perhaps run, for me to finish what I had let my family give their lives for. But the cauldron still held me there. Even as I tried to come back to that hill where Amryn had betrayed me, had used me for whatever purpose of her own. Nesta knelt before our father, her face a void. She gazed into his still open eyes. Closed them gently. Hands steady as stone. Cassian had shoved the king deeper into the trees. His shouts rang out. Nesta leaned forward to press a kiss to our father's blood-splattered brow, and when she lifted her head, the cauldron thrashed and roiled, for in Nesta's eyes, limning her skin, uncut power. She gazed toward the king and Cassian, just as Cassian's bark of pain cut toward us. The power around her shuddered. Nesta got to her feet. Then Cassian screamed. I looked toward him, away from my father. Not 20 feet away, Cassian was on the ground, wings snapped in spots, blood leaking from them. Bone jutted from his thigh. His siphons were dull, empty. He'd already drained them before coming here. Was exhausted. But he had come for her, for us. He was panting, blood dribbling from his nose, arms buckling as he tried to rise. The king of Highburn stood over him and extended a hand. Cassian arched off the ground, bellowing in pain. A bone cracked somewhere in his body. Stop. The king looked over his shoulder as Nesta stepped forward. Cassian mouthed at her to run. Blood escaping from his lips and onto the moss beneath him. Nesta took in his broken body, the pain in Cassian's eyes, and angled her head. The movement was not human, not fey, purely animal, purely predator. And when her eyes lifted to the king again, I am going to kill you, she said quietly.
Really?
The king asked, lifting a brow.
Because I can think of far more interesting things to do with you.
Not again. I could not watch this play out again, standing by, idle, while those I loved suffered.
The cauldron crept along with Nesta, a hound at her side. Nesta's fingers curled. The king snorted and brought his foot down upon Cassian's nearest wing. Bone snapped, and his scream. I thrashed against the cauldron's grip, thrashed and clawed. Nesta exploded. All of that power, all at once. The king winnowed out of the way. Her power blasted the trees behind him to cinders, blasted across the battlefield in a low arc, then landed right in the Hybern ranks, taking out hundreds before they knew what happened. The king appeared perhaps 30 feet away and laughed at the smoking ruins behind him.
Magnificent, he said. Barely trained, brash, but magnificent.
Nesta's fingers curled again as if rallying that power, but she'd spent it all in one blow. Her eyes were blue-gray once more.
Go,
Cassian managed to breathe.
Go.
This seems familiar, the king mused. Was it him or the other bastard who crawled toward you that day? Cassian was indeed now crawling toward her, broken wings and leg dragging, leaving a trail of blood over the grass and roots. Nesta rushed to him, kneeling, not to comfort, but to pick up his Illyrian blade. Cassian tried to stop her as she stood, as Nesta lifted that sword before the King of Hybern. She said nothing, only held her ground. The king chuckled and angled his own blade. Shall I see what the Illyrians taught you? He was upon her before she could lift the sword higher. Nesta jumped back, clipping his sword with her own, eyes flaring wide. The king lunged again, and Nesta again dodged and retreated through the trees, leading him away, away from Cassian. She managed to draw him another few feet before the king grew bored. In two movements, he had her disarmed. In another, he struck her across the face so hard she went down. Cassian cried out her name, trying again to crawl to her. The king only sheathed his sword, towering over her as she pushed off the ground.
Well, what else do you have?
Nesta turned over and threw out a hand. White burning power shot out of her palm and slammed into his chest. A ploy. To get him close. To lower his guard. Her power sent him flying back, trees snapping under him, one after another after another. The cauldron seemed to settle. All that was left. That was it. All that was left of her power. Nesta surged to her feet, staggering across the clearing, blood at her mouth from where he'd hit her, and threw herself to her knees before Cassian.
Get up,
she sobbed, hauling at his shoulder.
Get up!
He tried and failed.
You're too heavy,
she pleaded, but still tried to raise him, fingers scrabbling at his back, bloodied armor.
I can't. He's coming!
Go,
Cassian groaned. Her power had stopped hurling the king across the forest. He now stalked toward them, brushing off splinters and leaves from his jacket, taking his time, knowing she would not leave, savoring the awaiting slaughter. Nesta gritted her teeth, trying to haul Cassian up once more. A broken sound of pain ripped from him.
Go,
he barked at her.
I can't,
she breathed, voice breaking.
I can't.
The same words Rhys had given him. Cassian grunted in pain, but lifted his bloodied hands to cup her face.
I have no regrets in my life but this.
His voice shook with every word.
That we did not have time. That I did not have time with you, Nesta.
She didn't stop him as he leaned up and kissed her, lightly, as much as he could manage. Cassian said softly, brushing away the tear that streaked down her face.
I will find you again in the next world. The next life. And we will have that time. I promise.
The King of Highburn stepped into that clearing, dark power wafting from his fingertips. And even the cauldron seemed to pause in surprise. Surprise or some feeling, as Nesta looked at the king with death twining around his hands, then down at Cassian, and covered Cassian's body with her own. Cassian went still, and his hand slid over her back. Together. They'd go together.
I will offer you a bargain,
I said to the cauldron.
I will offer you my soul. Save them.
Romantic,
the king said, but ill-advised. Nesta did not move from where she shielded Cassian's body. The king raised his hand, power whirling like a dark galaxy in his palm. I knew they'd both die the moment that power hit them.
Anything,
I begged the cauldron.
Anything!
The king's hand began to drop, and then halted. A choking noise came out of him. For a moment, I thought the cauldron had answered my pleas. But as a black blade broke through the king's throat, spraying blood, I realized someone else had. Elaine stepped out of a shadow behind him and rammed Truth Teller to the hilt through the back of the king's neck as she snarled in his ear, "Don't you touch my sister!" Chapter 75. The cauldron purred in Elaine's presence as the King of Highburn slumped to his knees, clawing at the knife jutting through his throat. Elaine backed away a step. Choking, blood dribbling from his lips, the king gaped at Nesta. My sister lunged to her feet, not to go to Elaine, but to the king. Nesta wrapped her hand around Truth Teller's obsidian hilt, and slowly, as if savoring every bit of effort it took, Nesta began to twist the blade. Not a rotation of the blade itself, but a rotation into his neck. Elaine rushed to Cassian, but the warrior was panting, smiling grimly, and panting, as Nesta twisted and twisted the blade into the king's neck, severing flesh and bone and tendon. Nesta looked down at the king before she made the final pass, his hands still trying to rise, to claw the blade free. And in Nesta's eyes, it was the same look, the same gleam that she'd had that day in Highburn, when she pointed her finger at him in a death promise. She smiled a little, as if she remembered too. And then she pushed the blade, like a worker heaving the spoke of a mighty grinding wheel. The king's eyes flared, then his head tumbled off his shoulders.
Nesta,
Cassian groaned, trying to reach for her. The king's blood sprayed her leathers, her face. Nesta didn't seem to care as she bent over, as she took up his fallen head and lifted it. Lifted it in the air and stared at it, into Highburn's dead eyes, his gaping mouth. She did not smile. She only stared and stared and stared. Savage. Unyielding. Brutal.
Nesta,
Elaine whispered. Nesta blinked and seemed to realize it then, whose head she was holding, what she and Elaine had done. The king's head rolled from her bloodied hands. The cauldron seemed to realize what she'd done too, as his head thumped onto the mossy ground. That Elaine had defended this thief. Elaine, who it had gifted with such powers, found her so lovely, it had wanted to give her something. It would not harm Elaine, even in its hunt to reclaim what had been taken. It retreated the moment Elaine's eyes fell on our dead father lying in the adjacent clearing. The moment the scream came out of her. No! I lunged for them, but the cauldron was too fast, too strong. It whipped me back, 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 across the battlefield. No one seemed to know the king was dead. And our armies. Rhys and the other High Lords had given themselves wholly to the monsters that lurked under their skins. Swaths of enemy soldiers dying in their wake, shredded or gutted or rent in two. And Helion. The High Lord of Day was bloodied, his golden fur singed and torn, but he still battled against the Hybern commander. The commander remained unmarred, his face unruffled, as if he knew he might very well win against Helion Spellcleaver today. We arced away across the field, to Bryaxis, still fighting, holding the line for Grayson's men, a black cloud that cut a path for them, shielded them. Bryaxis, fear itself, guarding the mortals. We passed Draken and a black-haired woman with skin like dark honey, both squaring off against Jurien. They were fighting Jurien. Draken had an ancient score to settle, and so did Miriam. We whisked by so quickly I couldn't hear what was said. Couldn't see if Jurien was indeed fighting back or trying to fend them off while he explained. More joined the fray, bloodied and limping, shouting at them. It was the least of our problems. Because our armies? Hybern was overwhelming us. Without the king, without the cauldron, they'd still do it. The fervor the king had roused in them, their belief that they had been wronged and forgotten. They'd kept fighting. No solution would ever appease them beyond the complete reclaiming of what they still believed they were entitled to, deserved. There were too many. So many. And we were all drained. The cauldron hurtled away, withdrawing toward itself. There was a roar of pain, a roar I recognized even with the different harrowing form. Rhys. He was faltering. He needed help. The cauldron sucked back into itself, and I was again atop that rock. Again staring at Amryn, who was slapping my face, shouting my name. Stupid girl, she barked. Fight it. Rhys was hurt. Rhys was being overwhelmed. I snapped back into my body. My hand remained atop the cauldron, a living bond, but with the cauldron settled into itself. I blinked. I could blink. Amryn blew out a breath. What the hell? The king is dead, I said, my voice cold and foreign. And you're going to be soon, too. I'd kill her for this, for betraying us, for whatever reason. I know, Amryn said quietly, and I need you to help me do it. I almost let go of the cauldron at the words, but she shook her head. Don't break it, the contact. I need you to be a conduit. I don't understand. The Suriel. It gave you a message for me, only me. My brows narrowed. Amryn said, The answer in the book was no spell of control. I lied about that. It was an unbinding spell. For me.
What?
Amryn looked to the carnage, the screams of the dying ringing us. I thought I'd need your sisters to help you control the cauldron, but after you faced the Ouroboros, I knew you could do it. Just you and just me. Because when you unbind me with the cauldron's power in my real form, I will wipe that army away. Every last one of them.
Amryn.
But a male voice pleaded from behind.
Don't.
Varian appeared from the rocky path, gasping for breath, splattered with blood. Amryn smirked.
Like a hound on a scent.
Don't,
was all Varian said.
Unleash me,
Amryn said, ignoring him.
Let me end this.
I began shaking my head.
You will be gone. You said you won't remember us. You won't be you anymore if you're freed.
Amryn smiled slightly. At me, at Varian.
I watched them for so many eons. Humans in my world. There were humans, too. And I watched them love and hate. Wage senseless war and find precious peace. Watched them build lives, build worlds. I was never allowed such things. I had not been designed that way, had not been ordered to do so. So I watched. And that day I came here. It was the first selfish thing I had done. For a long, long while, I thought it was punishment for disobeying my father's orders, for wanting. I thought this world was some hell he'd locked me into for disobedience.
Amryn swallowed.
But I wonder if my father knew. If he saw how I watched them love and hate and build. And opened that rip in the world not as a punishment, but as a gift.
Her eyes gleamed. For it has been a gift. This time, with you, with all of you, it has been a gift.
Amryn,
Varian said, and sank onto his knees.
I am begging you.
Tell the High Lord,
she said softly, to leave out a cup for me. I did not think I had it in my heart for another ounce of sorrow. I gripped the cauldron a little harder, my throat thick.
I will.
She looked to Varian, a wry smile on her red mouth.
I watched them most. The humans who loved.
I never understood it. How it happened, why it happened. She paused a step away from the cauldron.
I think I might have learned with you, though. Perhaps that was a last gift, too.
Varian's face twisted with anguish, but he made no further move to stop her. She turned to me and spoke the words into my head. The spell I must think and feel and do. I nodded. When I am free, Amryn said to us, do not run. It will attract my attention. She lifted a steady hand toward my arm.
I am glad we met, Feyre.
I smiled at her, bowing my head.
Me too, Amryn.
Me too. Amryn grabbed my wrist and swung herself into the cauldron.
I fought with every breath to get through the spell, my arm half submerged in the cauldron as Amryn went under the dark water that had filled it. I said the words with my tongue, said them with my heart,
and blood and bones. Screamed them. Her hand vanished from my arm, melting away like dew under the morning sun. The spell ended, shuddering out of me, and I snapped back, losing my hold on the cauldron. Varian caught me before I fell, and gripped me hard as we gazed at the black mass of the cauldron, the still surface. He breathed.
Is she?
It started far, far beneath us, as if she had gone to the Earth's core. I let Varian haul me a few steps away as the ripple thundered up through the ground, spearing for us. The cauldron. We had only enough time to throw ourselves behind the nearest rock when it hit us. The cauldron shattered into three pieces, peeling apart like a blossoming flower. And then she came. She exploded from that mortal shell, light blinding us, light and fire. She was roaring, in victory and rage and pain. And I could have sworn I saw great burning wings, each feather a simmering ember spread wide. Could have sworn a crown of incandescent light floated just above her flaming hair. She paused. The thing that was inside Amran paused. Looked at us. At the battlefield. And all of our friends, our family, still fighting on it. As if to say, I remember you. And then she was gone. She spread those wings, flame and light rippling to encompass her, no more than a burning behemoth that swept down upon Highburn's armies. They began running. Amran came down on them like a hammer, raining fire and brimstone. She swept through them, burning them, drinking in their death. Some died at the mere whisper of her passing. I heard Rhys bellowing, and the sound was the same as hers, victory and rage and pain, and warning. A warning not to run from her. Bit by bit, she destroyed that endless Highburn army. Bit by bit, she wiped away their taint, their threat, the suffering they had brought. She shattered through that Highburn commander, poised to strike Helion a death blow. Shattered through that commander, as if he were made of glass. She left only ashes behind. But that power, it was fading, vanishing ember by ember. Yet Amran went to the sea, where my father and Vass's army battled alongside Miriam's people. Entire boats full of Highburn soldiers fell still after she passed, as if she had inhaled the life right out of them, even while her own life sputtered out. Amran reached the final boat, the very last ship of our enemy, and was no more than a flame on the breeze. And when that ship too fell silent, there was only light. Bright, clean light, dancing on the waves. Chapter 76. Tears slid down Varian's blood-flecked skin as we watched that spot on the sea where Amran had vanished. Below, beyond, our forces were beginning to cry out with victory, with joy. Up on the rock, utter quiet. I looked at last toward the broken thirds of the cauldron. Perhaps I had done it. In unbinding her, I had unbound the cauldron. Or perhaps Amran in her unleashed power. Even that had been too great for the cauldron. We should go, I said to Varian. The others would be looking for us. I had to get to my father, had to bury him, help Cassian. Had to see who else was among the dead, or living. Hollow. I was so tired and hollow. I managed to stand, to take one step before I felt it. The thing in the cauldron. Or lack of it. It was lack and substance, absence and presence, and It was leaking into the world. I dared a step toward it, and what I beheld in those ruins of the cauldron, it was a void, but also not a void, a growth. It did not belong here, belong anywhere. There were hands at my face, turning me, touching me.
Are you hurt? Are you?
Reese's face was battered, bloody. His hands were still tipped in talons, his canine still elongated, barely out of that beast form.
You freed her.
He was stammering, shaking. I wasn't entirely sure how he was even standing. I didn't know where to begin, how to explain. I let him see into my mind, his presence gentle, and exhausted as I was. I let him see my father, Nesta and Cassian, the king and Amran. All of it. Including that thing behind us, that hole. Rhys folded me into his arms, just for a moment.
We have a problem,
Varian murmured, pointing behind us. We followed the line of his finger, to where that fissure in the world within the shards of the cauldron. It was growing. The cauldron could never be destroyed. We had been warned, because our very world was bound to it. If the cauldron were destroyed, we would be too.
What have I done? I breathed. I had saved our friends, only to damn us all. Made and unmade. I had broken it. I could remake it again. I ran for the book, flipping open the pages. But the gold was engraved with symbols only one being on this earth knew how to read, and she was gone. I hurled the damn thing into the void inside the cauldron. It vanished and did not appear again.
Well, that's one way to try,
Rhys said. I whirled at the humor, but his face was hard, grim.
I don't know what to do, I whispered. Rhys studied the ruins.
Amran said you were a conduit.
I nodded.
So be one again.
What? He looked at me like I was the insane one as he said,
remake the cauldron. Forge it anew.
With what power?
My own.
You're drained, Rhys. So am I. We all are.
Try. Humor me.
I blinked, that edge of panic dulling a bit. Yes. Yes, with him, with my mate. I thought through the spell Amran had shown me. If I changed one small thing, it was a gamble, but it might work. Better than nothing, I said, blowing out a breath.
That's the spirit.
Humor danced in his eyes. The dead lay around us for miles, cries of the wounded and grieving starting to rise up. But we had stopped Highburn, stopped the king. Perhaps in this we would be lucky too. I reached for him, with my hand, my mind. His shields were up, solid walls he'd erected during battle. I brushed a hand along one, but it remained. Rhys smiled down at me, kissed me once.
Remind me to never get on Nesta's bad side.
That he could even joke. No, it was a form of enduring, for both of us. Because the alternative to laughter? Varian's devastated face, watching us silently, was the alternative. And with this thing before us, this final task. So I managed to laugh. And I was still smiling, just a bit, when I again laid my hand on the broken shards of the cauldron. It was a hole, airless. No life could exist here. No light. It was what had existed at the beginning, before all things had exploded from it. It did not belong here. Maybe one day, when the earth had grown old and died, when the stars had vanished too, maybe then we would return to this place. Not today, not now. I was both form and nothing. And behind me, Reese's power was a tether, an unending lightning strike that surged from me into this place, to be shaped as I willed it, made and unmade. From a distant corner of my memory, my human mind, I remembered a mural I had seen at the Spring Court, tucked away in a dusty, unused library. It told the story of Prithian. It told the story of a cauldron, this cauldron. And when it was held by female hands, all life flowed from it. I reached mine out, Reese's power rippling through me. United, joined as one, ask and answer. I was not afraid. Not with him there. I cupped my hands as if the cracked thirds of the cauldron could fit into them, the entire universe into the palm of my hand. I began to speak that last spell Amarin had found us. Speak and think and feel it. Word and breath and blood. Reese's power flowed through me, out of me. The cauldron appeared. Light danced along the fissures where the broken thirds had come together. There. There I would need to forge, to weld, to bind. I put a hand against the side of the cauldron. Raw, brutal power cascaded out of me. I leaned back into him, unafraid of that power, of the male who held me. It flowed and flowed, a burst dam of night. The cracks fizzled and blurred. That void began to slither back in. More. We needed more. He gave it to me. Reese handed over everything. I was a bearer, a vessel, a link. I love you, he whispered into my mind. I only leaned back into him, savoring his warmth, even in this non-place. Power shuddered through him. Wrapped around the cauldron. I recited the spell over and over and over. The first crack healed. Then the second. I felt him tremble behind me, heard his wet rasp of breath. I tried to turn. I love you, he said again. The third and final crack began to heal over. His power began to sputter, but it kept flowing out. I threw mine into it, sparks and snow and light and water. Together we threw everything in. We gave every last drop. Until that cauldron was whole. Until the thing it contained. It was in there, locked away. Until I could feel the sun again warming my face and saw that cauldron squatting before me, beneath my hand. I eased my fingers from the icy iron rim, gazed down into the inky depths. No cracks. Whole. I loosed a shuddering breath. We had done it. We had done. I turned. It took me a moment to grasp it. What I saw. Reese was sprawled on the rocky ground, wings draped behind him. He looked like he was sleeping, but as I breathed in, it wasn't there. That thing that rose and fell with each breath, that echoed each heartbeat. The mating bond. It wasn't there. It was gone. Because his own chest... It was not moving. And Reese was dead. Chapter 77. I had only silence in my head. Only silence as I began screaming. Screaming and screaming and screaming. The emptiness in my chest, my soul, at the lack of that bond, that life. I was shaking him, screaming his name and shaking him, and my body stopped being my body and just became this thing that held me and this lack of him, and I couldn't stop screaming and screaming. Then Moore was there, and Azriel, swaying on his feet, an arm hooked around Cassian, just as bloody and barely standing thanks to the blue-webbed siphon patches all over him, over them both. They were saying things, but all I could hear was that last, "I love you," which had not been a declaration, but a goodbye. And he had known. He had known. He had nothing left, and stopping it would take everything. It would cost him everything. He'd kept his shields up so I wouldn't see, because I wouldn't have said yes. I would have rather the world ended than this thing he had done, and this emptiness where he was, where we were. Someone was trying to haul me away from him, and I let out a sound that might have been a snarl or another scream, and they let go. I couldn't live with this. Couldn't endure this. Couldn't breathe. There were hands, unknown hands, on his throat, touching him. I lunged for them, but someone held me back. "He's seeing if there's anything to be done," Moore said. Voice raw. He. Him. Theseon. High Lord of the Dawn. And of healing. I lunged again to beg him to plead, but he shook his head. At Moore. At the others. Tarquin was there. Helion. Panting and battered. "He..." Helion rasped, then shook his head, closing his eyes. "Of course he did," he said, more to himself than anyone. "Please," I said, and wasn't sure who I was speaking to. My fingers scraped against Rhys's armor, trying to get to the heart beneath. "The cauldron. Maybe the cauldron. I did not know those spells, how to put him in and make sure he came back out." Hands wrapped around my own. They were blood-splattered and cut up, but gentle. I tried to pull away, but they held firm as Tarquin knelt beside me and said, "I'm sorry." It was those two words that shattered me. Shattered me in a way I didn't know I could still be broken. A rendering of every tether and leash. "Stay with the High Lord." The Suriel's last warning. "Stay and live to see everything righted." A lie. A lie! As Rhys had lied to me. "Stay with the High Lord. Stay." For there, the torn scraps of the mating bond, floating on the phantom wind inside me. I grasped at them, tugged at them, as if he'd answer, "Stay. Stay, stay, stay." I clung to those scraps and remnants, clawing at the void that lurked beyond. "Stay." I looked up at Tarquin, lip curling back from my teeth, looked at Helion and Theseon and Baron and Calais, Vivian weeping at his side, and I snarled, "Bring him back." Blank faces. I screamed at them, "Bring him back!" Nothing. "You did it for me," I said, breathing hard. "Now do it for him."
"You were human," Helion said carefully. "It is not the same."
"I don't care. Do it." When they didn't move, I rallied the dregs of my power, readying to rip into their minds and force them. Not caring what rules or laws it broke, I wouldn't care, only if...
Tarquin stepped forward. He slowly extended his hand toward me.
"For what he gave,"
Tarquin said quietly.
"Today, and for many years before."
And as that seed of light appeared in his palm, I began crying again. Watched it drop onto Reese's bare throat and vanish into the skin beneath, an echo of light flaring once. Helion stepped forward. That kernel of light in his hand flickered as it fell onto Reese's skin. Then Calias, and Theson, until only Baron stood there. Moore drew her sword and laid it on his throat. He jerked, having not even seen her move.
"I do not mind making one more kill today," she said.
Baron gave her a withering glare, but shoved off the sword and strode forward. He practically chucked that fleck of light onto Reese. I didn't care about that either. I didn't know the spell, the power it came from, but I was High Lady. I held out my palm, willing that spark of life to appear. Nothing happened. I took a steadying breath, remembering how it had looked.
"Tell me how,"
I growled to no one. Theson coughed and stepped forward, explaining the core of power and on, and I didn't care, but I listened until... There. Small as a sunflower seed. It appeared in my palm. A bit of me, my life. I laid it gently on Reese's blood-crusted throat. And I realized, just as he appeared, what was missing. Tamlin stood there, summoned by either the death of a fellow High Lord or one of the others around me. He was splattered in mud and gore, his new bandolier of knives mostly empty. He studied Reese, lifeless before me, studied all of us, the palms still out. There was no kindness on his face, no mercy. "Please," was all I said to him. Then Tamlin glanced between us, me and my mate. His face did not change.
"Please,"
I wept.
I will give you anything."
Something shifted in his eyes at that, but not kindness, no emotion at all. I laid my head on Rhysand's chest, listening for any kind of heartbeat through that armor.
"Anything?"
I breathed to no one in particular.
"Anything?"
Steps scuffed on the rocky ground. I braced myself for another set of hands trying to pull me away and dug my fingers in harder. The steps remained behind me for long enough that I looked. Tamlin stood there, staring down at me, those green eyes swimming with some emotion I couldn't place.
"Be happy, Feyre,"
he said quietly, and dropped that final kernel of light onto Rhysand. I had not witnessed it when it had been done to me, so all I did was hold on to him, to his body, to the tatters of that bond.
"Stay,"
I begged.
"Stay."
Light glowed beyond my shut eyelids.
"Stay."
And in the silence, I began to tell him. About that first night I'd seen him, when I'd heard that voice beckoning me to the hills, when I couldn't resist its summons, and now I wondered if I had heard him calling for me on Cailin Mhi. If it had been his voice that brought me there that night. I told him how I had fallen in love with him. Every glance and past note and croak of laughter he coaxed from me. I told him of everything we'd done, and what it had meant to me, and all that I still wanted to do, all the life still left before us. And in return, a thud sounded. I opened my eyes.
Another thud.
And then, his chest rose, lifting my head with it. I couldn't move, couldn't breathe. A hand brushed my back. Then Reese groaned.
If we're all here, either things went very, very wrong, or very right.
Cassian's broken laugh cracked out of him. I couldn't lift my head. Couldn't do anything but hold him, savoring every heartbeat and breath and the rumble of his voice as Reese rasped,
"You lot will be pleased to know. My power remains my own. No thieving here." "You do know how to make an entrance," Helion drawled. "Or should I say, exit?"
"You're horrible," Vivian snapped. "That's not even remotely funny." I didn't hear what else they said. Reese sat up, lifting me off him. He brushed away the hair clinging to my damp cheeks.
"Stay with the High Lord," he murmured.
I hadn't believed it until I looked into that face, those star-flecked eyes. Hadn't let myself believe it wasn't anything but some delusion.
"It's real,"
he said, kissing my brow.
"And there's another surprise."
He pointed with a healed hand toward the cauldron.
"Someone fish out dear Amryn before she catches a cold."
Varian whirled toward us, but Mor was sprinting for the cauldron, and her cry as she reached in. "How?" I breathed. Asriel and Varian were there, helping Mor heave a waterlogged form out of the dark water. Her chest rose and fell. Her features the same, but...
"She was there,"
Reese said.
"When the cauldron was sealing, going wherever we go."
Amryn sputtered water, vomiting onto the rocky ground. Mor thumped her back, coaxing her through it.
"So I reached out a hand,"
Reese went on quietly,
"to see if she might want to come back."
And as Amryn opened her eyes, as Varian let out a choked sound of relief and joy, I knew what she had given up to come back. High Fae, and just like that. For her silver eyes were solid, unmoving. No smoke, no burning mist in them. A normal life. No trace of her powers to be seen. And as Amryn smiled at me, I wondered if that had been her last gift. If it all had been a gift. Chapter 78. Amongst the sprawling field of corpses and wounded, there was one body I wanted to bury. Only Nesta, Elaine, and I returned to that clearing, once Asriel had given the all clear that the battle was well and truly over. Letting Reese out of my sight to wrangle our scattered armies, sort through the living and dead, and figure out some semblance of order was an effort in self-control. I nearly begged Reese to come with us, so he didn't have to let go of his hand, which I had not stopped clutching since those moments I'd heard his beautiful, solid heartbeat echoing into his body once more. But this task, this farewell, I knew deep down that it was only for my sisters and me. So I released Reese's hand, kissing him once, twice, and left him in the war camp to help Mor haul a barely standing Cassian to the nearest healer. Nesta was watching them when I reached her and Elaine at the tree-lined outskirts. Had she done some healing somehow in these moments after she severed the king's head? Or had it been Cassian's immortal blood and Asriel's battlefield patching that had already healed him enough to manage to stand, even with the wing and leg? I didn't ask my sister, and she supplied no answer as she took the water bucket dangling from Elaine's still bloody hands, and I followed them both through the trees. The King of Highburn's corpse lay in the clearing, crows already picking at it.
Nesta spat on it before we approached our father. The crows barely scattered in time. The screams and moaning of the wounded was a distant wall of sound. Another world away from the sun-dappled clearing. From the blood still fresh on the moss and grass. I blocked out the coppery tang of it. Cassian's blood. The king's blood. Nesta's blood. Only our father had not bled. He hadn't been given a chance to. And through whatever small mercy of the mother, the crows hadn't started on him. Elaine quietly washed his face, combed out his hair and beard, straightened his clothes. She found flowers, somewhere. She laid them at his head, on his chest. We stared down at him in silence.
I love you,
Elaine whispered, voice breaking. Nesta said nothing, face unreadable. There were such shadows in her eyes. I hadn't told her what I'd seen, had let them tell me what they wanted. Elaine breathed.
Should we say a prayer?
We did not have such things in the human world, I remembered. My sisters had no prayers to offer him, but in Prithian. Mother hold you, I whispered, reciting words I had not heard since that day under the mountain. May you pass through the gates. May you smell that immortal land of milk and honey. Flame ignited at my fingertips, all I could muster, all that was left. Fear no evil. Feel no pain. My mouth trembled as I breathed. May you enter eternity. Tears slid down Elaine's pallid cheeks as she adjusted an errant flower on our father's chest, white-petaled and delicate, and then backed away to my side with a nod. Nesta's face did not shift as I sent that fire to ignite our father's body. He was ash on the wind in a matter of moments. We stared at the burned slab of earth for long minutes, the sun shifting overhead. Steps crunched on the grass behind us. Nesta whirled, but Lucian. It was Lucian. Lucian, haggard and bloody, panting for breath, as if he'd run from the shore. His gaze settled on Elaine, and he sagged a little, but Elaine only wrapped her arms around herself and remained at my side.
Are you hurt?
He asked, coming toward us, spying the blood speckling Elaine's hands. He halted short as he noticed the King of Highburn's decapitated head on the other side of the clearing. Nesta was still showered with his blood. I'm fine, Elaine said quietly, and then asked, noticing the gore on him, the torn clothes and still bloody weapons. Are you?
Well, I never want to fight in another battle as long as I live, but yes, I'm in one piece.
A faint smile bloomed on Elaine's lips, but Lucian noticed that scorched patch of grass behind us and said,
I heard. What happened? I'm sorry for your loss. All of you.
I just strode to him and threw my arms around his neck, even if it wasn't the embrace he was hoping for. Thank you for coming. With the battle, I mean.
I've got one hell of a story to tell you,
he said, squeezing me tightly.
And don't be surprised if Vasa corners you as soon as the ships are sorted and the sun sets.
Is she really?
Yes, but your father, ever the negotiator.
A sad, small smile toward that burnt grass.
He managed to cut a deal with Vasa's keeper to come here. Temporarily, but better than nothing. But yes, queen by night, firebird by day.
He blew out a breath. Nasty curse. The human queens are still out there, I said. Maybe I'd hunt them down.
Not for long. Not if Vasa has anything to do with it.
You sound like an acolyte.
Lucian blushed, glancing at Elaine.
She's got a foul temper and a fouler mouth.
He cut me a wry look.
You'll get along just fine.
I nudged him in the ribs. But Lucian again looked at that singed grass, and his blood-splattered face turned solemn.
He was a good man, he said. He loved you all very much.
I nodded, unable to form the words, the thoughts. Nesta didn't so much as blink to indicate she'd heard. Elaine just wrapped her arms tighter around herself, a few more tears streaking free. I spared Lucian the torment of debating whether to touch her, and linked my arm through his as I began to walk away, letting my sisters decide to follow or remain, if they wanted a moment alone with that burnt grass. Elaine came. Nesta stayed. Elaine fell into step beside me, peering at Lucian. He noticed it.
I heard you made the killing blow, he said.
Elaine studied the trees ahead. Nesta did. I just stabbed him. Lucian seemed to fumble for a response, but I said to him, So, where now? Off with Vasa? I wondered if he'd heard of Tamlin's role, the help he'd given us. A look at my friend showed me he had. Someone, perhaps my mate, had informed him. Lucian shrugged.
First, here, to help. Then,
another glance at Elaine.
Who knows?
I nudged Elaine, who blinked at me, then blurted, You could come to Valaris. He saw all of it, but nodded graciously.
It would be my pleasure.
As we strode back to the camp, Lucian told us of his time away, how he'd hunted for Vasa, how he'd found her already with my father, an army marching westward, how Miriam and Draken had found them on their own journey to help us. I was still mulling over all he said when I slipped into my tent to finally change out of my leathers, leaving him and Elaine to go find a place to wash up and talk, perhaps. But as I strode through the flaps, sound greeted me within. Talking. Many voices, one of them belonging to my mate. I got one step inside and knew I wouldn't be changing my clothes anytime soon. For seated in a chair before the brazier was Prince Draken, Rhys sprawled and still bloody on the cushions across from him. And on the pillows beside Rhys sat a lovely female, her dark hair tumbling down her back in luscious curls, already smiling at me. Miriam. Chapter 79. Miriam's smiling face was more human than High Fae. But Miriam, I remembered, as she and Draken rose to their feet to greet me, was only half Fae. She bore the delicately pointed ears, but there was something still human about her, and that broad smile that lit up her brown eyes. I instantly liked her. Mud splattered her own leathers, a different make than the Illyrians, but obviously designed by another aerial people to keep warm in the skies, and a few speckles of blood coated the honey-brown skin along her neck and hands, but she didn't seem to notice or care. She held out her hands to me. Hi, lady, Miriam said, her accent the same as Draken's, rolling and rich. I took her hands, surprised to find them dry and warm. She squeezed my fingers tightly while I managed to say, I've heard so much about you. Thank you for coming. I cast a look at where Rhys still remained sprawled on the cushions, watching us with raised brows. For someone who was just dead, I said tightly, you seem remarkably relaxed. Rhys smirked.
I'm glad you're bouncing back to your usual spirits, Feyre, darling.
Draken snorted and took my hands, squeezing them as tightly as his mate had.
What he doesn't want to tell you, my lady, is that he's so damn old he can't stand up right now.
I whirled to Rhys. Are you...
Fine, fine,
Rhys said, waving a hand, even as he groaned a bit.
Though perhaps now you see why I didn't bother visiting these two for so long. They're terribly cruel to me.
Miriam laughed, plopping down on the cushions again. Your mate was in the middle of telling us your story, as it seems you've already heard ours.
I had. But even as Prince Draken gracefully returned to his seat and I slid into the chair beside his, just watching the two of them, I wanted to know the entire thing. One day. Not tomorrow or the day after, but one day I wanted to hear their tale in full. But for now, I saw you two battling Jurian.
Draken instantly stiffened. Miriam's eyes going shuttered as I asked, Is he dead?
No,
was all Draken said.
More, Miriam cut in, frowning, wound up convincing us not to settle things.
They would have. From the expression on Draken's face, the prince still didn't seem convinced. And from the haunted gleam in Miriam's eyes, it seemed as if far more had occurred during that fight than they let on. But I still asked, where is he?
Draken shrugged.
After we didn't kill him, I have no idea where he slithered off to.
Rhys gave me a half smile.
He's with Lord Grayson's men, seeing to the wounded.
Miriam asked carefully, are you friends with Jurian?
No, I said. I mean, I don't think so, but every word he said was true. And he did help me, a great deal.
Neither of them so much as nodded as they exchanged a long glance, unspoken words passing between them. Rhys asked,
I thought I saw Nefel during the battle. Any chance I'll get to say hello? Or is she too important now to bother with me?
Laughter, beautiful laughter, danced in his eyes. I straightened, smiling. She's here? Draken lifted a dark brow.
You know Nefel?
Know of her, I said, and glanced toward the tent flaps, as if she'd come striding right in. It's a long story.
We have time to hear it, Miriam said, then added, or a bit of time, I suppose. For there were indeed many, many things to sort out, including... I shook my head. Later, I said to Miriam, to her mate. The proof that a world could exist without a wall, without a treaty. There's something... I relayed my thought down the bond to Rhys, earning a nod of approval before I said, is your island still secret? Miriam and Draken exchanged a guilty look.
We do apologize for that, Miriam offered. It seems that the glamour worked too well, if it kept well-meaning messengers away.
She shook her head, those beautiful curls moving with her. We would have come sooner. We left the moment we realized what trouble you all were in.
No, I said, shaking my own head, scrambling for the words. No, I don't blame you. Mother above, we owe you.
I blew out a breath.
We are in your debt.
Draken and Miriam objected to that, but I went on.
What I mean is, if there was an object of terrible power that now needed to be hidden, would Cretea remain a good place to conceal it? Again, that look between them. A look between mates.
Yes,
Draken said.
Miriam breathed. You mean the cauldron?
I nodded. It had been hauled into our camp, guarded by whatever Illyrians could still stand,
None of the other High Lords had asked, for now. But I could see the debate that would rage. The war we might start internally over who exactly got to keep the cauldron.
It needs to disappear, I said softly.
Permanently, I added, before anyone remembers to lay claim to it. Draken and Miriam considered. Some unspoken conversation passing between them, perhaps down their own mating bond.
When we leave, Draken said at last, one of our ships might find itself a little heavier in the water.
I smiled. Thank you.
When are you exactly planning to leave?
Rhys asked, lifting a brow.
Kicking us out already,
Draken said with a half-smile.
A few days, Miriam cut in wryly. As soon as the injured are ready.
Good, I said.
They all looked at me. I swallowed. I mean, not that I'm glad for you to go.
The amusement in Miriam's eyes spread, twinkling. I smiled myself.
I want you here, because I'd like to call a meeting.
A day later, I didn't know how it had come together so quickly. I'd merely explained what I wanted, what we needed to do, and Rhys and Draken made it happen. There was no proper space to do it. Not with the camps in disarray. But there was one place, a few miles off. And as the sun set, and my family's half-ruined estate became filled with High Lords and princes, generals and commanders, humans and fae, I still didn't have the words to really express it. How we could all gather in the giant sitting room, the only usable space in my family's old estate, and actually have this meeting. I'd slept through the night, deep and undisturbed, Rhys in bed beside me. I hadn't let go of him until dawn had leaked into our tent. And then, the war camps were too full of blood and injured and the dead. And there was this meeting to arrange between various armies and camps and peoples. It took all day, but by the end of it, I found myself in the wrecked foyer, Rhys and the others beside me, the chandelier a broken mass behind us on the cracked marble floor. The High Lords arrived first, starting with Baron. Baron, who did not so much as glance at his son who was not his son. Lucian, standing on my other side, didn't acknowledge Baron's existence either, or Eris's, as he strode a step behind his father. Eris was bruised and cut up enough to indicate he must have been in terrible shape after the fighting ceased yesterday, sporting a brutal slice down his cheek and neck, barely healed. Mor let out a satisfied grunt at the sight of it, or perhaps a sound of disappointment that the wound had not been fatal. Eris continued by as if he hadn't heard it, but didn't sneer at least. Rather, he just nodded at Rhys. It was silent promise enough. Soon. Soon, perhaps, Eris would finally take what he desired and call in our debt. We did not bother to nod back. None of us. Especially not Lucian, who continued dutifully ignoring his eldest brother. But as Eris strode by, I could have sworn there was something like sadness, like regret as he glanced to Lucian. Tamlin crossed the threshold moments later. He had a bandage over his neck and one over his arm. He came, as he had to that first meeting, with no one in tow. I wondered if he knew that this wrecked house had been purchased with the money he'd given my father, with the kindness he'd shown them. But Tamlin's attention didn't go to me. It went to the person just to my left, to Lucian. Lucian stepped forward, head high, even as that metal eye whirred. My sisters were already within the sitting room, ready to guide our guests to their predetermined spots. We'd planned those carefully, too. Tamlin paused a few feet away. None of us said a word. Not as Lucian opened his mouth. Tamlin. But Tamlin's attention had gone to the clothes Lucian now wore. The Illyrian leathers. He might as well have been wearing night court black. It was an effort to keep my mouth shut. To not explain that Lucian didn't have any other clothes with him, and that they weren't a sign of his allegiance. Tamlin just shook his head, loathing simmering in his green eyes, and walked past, not a word. I looked at Lucian in time to see the guilt, the devastation flicker in that russet eye. Rhys had indeed told Lucian everything about Tamlin's covert assistance. His help in dragging Baron here, saving me at the camp. But Lucian remained standing with us as Tamlin found his place in the sitting room to our right. Did not glance at his friend even once. Lucian wasn't foolish enough to beg for forgiveness. That conversation, that confrontation, it would take place at another time. Another day, or week, or month. I lost track of who filed in afterward. Traken and Miriam along with a host of their people, including... I started at the slight, dark-haired female who entered on Miriam's right, her wings much smaller than the other seraphim. I glanced to where Azriel stood on Rhys's other side, bandaged all over and wings in splints after he'd worked them too hard yesterday. The Shadow Singer nodded in confirmation. Nefel. I smiled at the legendary warrior scribe when she noticed my stare as she passed by. She grinned right back at me. Calais and Vivian flowed in, along with that female who was indeed her sister. Then Tarquin and Varian. Theson and his battered peregrine captain, whose hand he tightly held. Helion was the last of the High Lords to arrive. I didn't dare look through the ruined doorway to where Lucian now stood in the sitting room, close to Elaine's side as she and my sister silently kept against the wall by the intact bay of windows. Baron, wisely, did not approach, and Eris only looked over every now and then to watch. Helion was limping, flanked by a few of his captains and generals, but still managed a grim smile. "Better enjoy this while it lasts," he said to me and Rhys. "I doubt we'll be so unified when we walk out of here."
"Thank you for the words of encouragement," I said tightly, and Helion chuckled as he eased inside. More and more people filled that room, the tense conversation broken up by bursts of laughter or greeting. Rhys at last told our family to head into the room while he and I waited. Waited and waited. Long minutes. It'd take them longer to arrive, I realized, since they couldn't winnow or move as quickly through the world. I was about to turn into the room to begin without them when two male figures filled the night-darkened doorway. Jurian and Grayson. And behind them, a small contingent of other humans. I swallowed hard. Now the difficult part would begin. Grayson looked inclined to turn around, the fresh cut down his cheek crinkling as he scowled, but Jurian nudged him in. A black eye bloomed on the left side of Jurian's face. I wondered if Miriam or Draken had given it to him. My money was on the former. Grayson only gave us a tight nod. Jurian smirked at me. "I put you on opposite ends of the room," I said. From both Miriam and Draken, and from Elaine. Neither man responded, and only strode proud and tall into that room full of fae. Rhys kissed my cheek and strode in behind them. Which left, as Lucian had promised, with darkness now overhead, Vasa found me. The last to arrive. The last piece of this meeting. She stormed over the threshold, breathless and unfaltering, and paused only a foot away. Her unbound hair was a reddish gold, thick dark lashes and brows framing the most stunningly blue eyes I'd ever seen. Beautiful. Her freckled skin, golden brown and gleaming. Only a few years older than me, but young feeling. Cultish. Fierce and untamed, despite her curse. Vasa said in a lilting accent,
"Are you Feyre Cursebreaker?"
"Yes," I said, sensing Rhys listening wryly from the other room, where the rest were now beginning to quiet themselves, to wait for me. Vasa's full mouth tightened.
"I am sorry about your father. He was a great man."
Nesta, striding out of the sitting room, halted at the words, looked Vasa up and down. Vasa returned the favor.
"You are Nesta,"
Vasa declared, and I wondered how my father had described her so that Vasa would know.
"I'm sorry for your loss, too."
Nesta simply regarded her with that cool indifference.
"I heard you slew the King of Highburn," Vasa said,
those dark brows narrowing as she again surveyed Nesta, searching for any sign of a warrior beneath the blue dress she wore. Vasa only shrugged to herself when Nesta didn't reply and said to me,
"He was a better father to me than my own. I owe much to him, and will honor his memory as long as I live."
The look Nesta was giving the queen was enough to wither the grass beyond the shattered front door. It didn't get any better, as Vasa said,
"Can you break the curse on me, Feyre Archeron?"
"Is that why you agreed to come so quickly?" A half smile.
"Partly. Lucian suggested you had gifts, and other High Lords do as well."
Like his father, his true one, Helion. She went on before I could answer.
"I do not have much time left before I must return to the lake, to him,
to the Death Lord who held her leash."
"Who is he?" I breathed.
Vasa only shook her head, waving a hand as her eyes darkened and repeated,
"Can you break my curse?"
I don't know how to break those kinds of spells," I admitted. Her face fell. I added, "But we can try." She considered.
"With the healing of our armies, I won't be able to leave for some time. Perhaps it will give me a loophole, as Lucian called it, to remain longer."
Another shake of the head.
"We shall discuss this later," she declared, "along with the threat my fellow queens pose."
My heart stumbled a beat. A cruel smile curved Vasa's mouth.
"They will try to intervene," she said, "with any sort of peace talks. Highburn sent them back before this battle, but I have no doubt they were smart enough to encourage that, not to waste their armies here."
"That they will elsewhere?" Nesta demanded. Vasa tossed her smooth sheet of hair over a shoulder.
"We shall see. And you will think of ways to help me."
I waited until she headed for the sitting room before I flicked my brows up at the order. Either she didn't know or didn't care that I was also a queen in my right. Nesta smirked.
"Good luck with that."
I scowled, shoving down the worry already blooming in my gut, and said,
"Where are you going? The meeting is starting."
"Why should I be in there?"
"You're the guest of honor. You killed the king."
Shadows flickered in her face.
"So what?"
I blinked.
"You're our emissary as well. You should be here for this."
Nesta looked toward the stairs, and I noticed the object she clutched in her fist. The small wooden carving. I couldn't make out what manner of animal it was, but I knew the wood. Knew the work. One of the little carvings our father had crafted during those years he hadn't done much of anything at all. I looked at her face before she could notice my attention. Nesta said,
"Do you think it will work? This meeting?"
With so many fey ears in the room beyond, I didn't dare give any answer but the truth. "I don't know, but I'm willing to try." I offered my hand to my sister. "I want you here for this. With me." Nesta considered that outstretched hand. For a moment, I thought she'd walk away. But she slid her hand into mine, and together we walked into that room crammed with humans and fae, both parts of this world, all parts of this world. High fae from every court. Miriam and Draken and their retinue. Humans from many territories. All watching me and Nesta as we entered, as we strode to where Rhys and the others waited, facing the gathered room. I tried not to cringe at the shattered furniture that had been sorted through for any possible seats. At the ripped wallpaper, the half-dangling curtains. But it was better than nothing. I supposed the same could be said of our world. Silence settled. Rhys nudged me forward, a hand brushing the small of my back as I took a step past him. I lifted my chin, scanning the room, and I smiled at them, the humans and fae assembled here, in peace. My voice was clear and unwavering.
"My name is Feyre Archeron.
I was once human, and now I am fae. I call both worlds my home, and I would like to discuss renegotiating the treaty." Chapter 80. A world divided was not a world that could thrive. That first meeting went on for hours, many of us short-tempered with exhaustion, but channels were made, stories were exchanged, tales narrated of either side of the wall. I told them my story, all of it. I told it to the strangers who did not know me. I told it to my friends. And I told it to Tamlin, hard-faced by the distant wall. I explained the years of poverty, the trails under the mountain, the love I had found and let go, the love that had healed and saved me. My voice did not quaver. My voice did not break. Nearly everything I had seen in the Ouroboros, I let them see it too. Told them. And when I was done, Miriam and Draken stepped forward to tell their own story. Another glimmer of proof that humans and fae could not only work together, live together, but become so much more. I listened to every word of it. I did not bother to brush away my tears at times. I only clutched Rhys's hand and did not let go. There were several others with tales, some that went counter to our own. Relations that had not gone so well, crimes committed, hurts that could not be forgiven. But it was a start. There was still much work to be done, trust to build, but the matter of crafting a new wall. It remained to be seen whether we could agree on that. Many of us were against it. Many of the humans, rightfully so, were wary. There were still other fae territories to contend with, those who had found Highburn's promises appealing, seductive. The High Lords quarreled the most about the possibility of a new wall, and with every word of it, just as Helion said, that temporary allegiance frayed and snapped. Court lines were redrawn. But at least they stayed until the end, until the early hours of the morning when we finally decided that the rest would be discussed on another day, at another place. It would take time, time and healing and trust. And I wondered if the road ahead, the road to true peace, would perhaps be the hardest and longest one yet. The others left, winnowing or flying or striding off into the darkness, already peeling back into their groups and courts and war bands. I watched them go from the open doorway of the estate until they were only shadows against the night. I'd seen Elaine staring out the window earlier, watching Grayson leave with his men without so much as look back at her. He had meant every word that day at his keep. Whether he noticed that Elaine still wore his engagement ring, that Elaine stared and stared at him as he walked off into the night, I didn't know. Let Lucian deal with that for now. I sighed, leaning my head against the cracked stone doorframe. The grand wooden door had been shattered completely, the splinters still scattered on the marble entry behind me. I recognized his scent before I heard his easy steps approach. "Where do you go now?" I asked, without looking over my shoulder, as Jurian paused beside me and stared into the darkness. Miriam and Draken had left quickly, needing to tend to their wounded, and to spirit away the cauldron to one of their ships before the other High Lords had a moment to consider its whereabouts. Jurian leaned against the opposite doorframe.
"Queen Vasa offered me a place within her court."
Indeed, Vasa still remained inside, chatting with Lucian animatedly. I supposed that if she only had until dawn before turning back into that firebird, she wanted to make every minute count. Lucian, surprisingly, was chuckling, his shoulders loose and his head angled while he listened.
"Are you going to accept?"
Jurian's face was solemn, tired.
"What sort of court can a cursed queen have? She's bound to that Death Lord. She has to go back to his lake on the continent at some point."
He shook his head.
"Too bad the king was so spectacularly beheaded by your sister. I bet he could have found a way to break that curse of hers."
"Too bad indeed," I muttered. Jurian grunted his amusement. "Do you think we stand a chance?" I asked, motioning to the human figure still walking far away back toward the camp. "Of peace between all of us?" Jurian was silent for a long moment.
"Yes," he said softly. "I do."
And I didn't know why, but it gave me comfort. I was still mulling over Jurian's words days later, when that war camp was at last dismantled, when we said our final goodbyes and made promises, some more sincere than others, to see each other again. When my court, my family, winnowed back to Valaris. Sunlight still leaked in through the windows of the townhouse. The scent of citrus and the sea and baked bread still filled every room. And distantly, children were still laughing in the streets. Home. Home was the same. Home was untouched. I squeezed Reese's hand so tightly, I thought he'd complain, but he only squeezed right back. And even though we had all bathed, as we stood there was a grime to us, like the blood hadn't entirely washed off. And I realized that home was indeed the same, but perhaps we were not. Amryn muttered, "I suppose I shall have to eat real food now."
"A monumental sacrifice,"
Cassian quipped. She gave him a vulgar gesture, but her eyes narrowed at the sight of his still bandaged wings. Her eyes, normal silver eyes, slid to Nesta, holding herself by the stair rail, as if she'd retreat to her room. My sister had barely spoken, barely eaten these past few days, had not visited Cassian in his healing bed, still had not talked to me about what had happened. Amryn said to her,
I'm surprised you didn't take the king's head back to have stuffed and hung on your wall.
Nesta's eyes shot to her. Moor clicked her tongue.
Some would consider that joke to be in bad taste, Amryn.
I saved your asses. I'm entitled to say what I want.
And with that, Amryn stalked out of the house and into the city streets.
The new Amryn is even crankier than the old one, Elaine said softly.
I burst out laughing. The others joined me, and even Elaine smiled broadly. All but Nesta, who stared at nothing. When the cauldron had been broken, I didn't know if it had broken that power in her too, severed its bond, or if it still lived somewhere within her.
Come on, Moor said, slinging her arm around Asriel's shoulders, then one carefully around Cassian's, and leading them toward the sitting room.
We need a drink.
We're opening the fancy bottles,
Cassian called over his shoulder to Rhys, still limping on that barely healed leg. My mate sketched a subservient bow.
Save a bit for me, at least.
Rhys glanced at my sisters, then winked at me. The shadows of battle still lingered, but that wink. I was still shaky with terror that it wasn't real, that it was all some fever dream inside the cauldron.
It is real,
he purred into my mind.
I'll prove it to you later.
For hours. I snorted, and watched as he made an excuse to no one in particular about finding food and sauntered down the hall, hands in his pockets. Alone in the foyer with my sisters, Elaine still smiling a bit, Nesta stone-faced, I took a breath. Lucian had remained behind to help with any of the human wounded still needing Fae healing, but had promised to come here when he finished. And as for Tamlin, I hadn't spoken to him, had barely seen him after he'd told me to be happy and given me back my mate. He'd left the meeting before I could say anything. So I gave Lucian a note to hand to him if he saw him, which I knew he would. There was a stop that Lucian had to make before he came here, he'd said. I knew where he meant. My note to Tamlin was short. It conveyed everything I needed to say. Thank you. I hope you find happiness, too. And I did. Not just for what he'd done for Rhys, but even for an immortal, there was not enough time in life to waste it on hatred, on feeling it and putting it into the world. So I wished him well, I truly did, and hoped that one day perhaps he would face those insidious fears, that destructive rage rotting away inside him. So, I said to my sisters, what now? Nesta just turned and went up the stairs, each step slow and stiff. She shut her door with a decisive click once she got to her bedroom.
With Father,
Elaine whispered, still staring up those steps.
I don't think Nesta...
I know, I murmured. I think Nesta needs to sort through a lot of it. Too much of it. Elaine faced me.
Do we help her?
I fiddled with the end of my braid. Yes, but not today. Not tomorrow. I loosed a breath. When she's ready. When we were ready, too. Elaine nodded, smiling up at me, and it was tentative joy and life that shone in her eyes. A promise of the future, gleaming and sweet. I led her into the sitting room where Cassian had a bottle of amber-colored liquor in each hand, Asriel was already rubbing his temples, and Moore was grabbing fine-cut crystal glasses off a shelf.
What now?
Elaine mused, at last answering my question from moments ago, as her attention drifted to the windows facing the sunny street. That smile grew bright enough that it lit up even Asriel's shadows across the room.
I would like to build a garden, she declared. After all of this, I think the world needs more gardens.
My throat was too tight to immediately reply, so I just kissed my sister's cheek before I said, Yes, I think it does. Chapter 81 Resand.
Even from the kitchen, I could hear all of them. The lapping of what was surely the oldest bottle of liquor I owned, then the clink of those equally ancient crystal glasses against each other. Then the laughter. The deep rumble. That was Asriel, laughing at whatever Moore had said that prompted her into a fit of it as well. The sound cackling and merry. And then another laugh, silvery and bright, more beautiful than any music played at one of Valaris's countless halls and theaters. I stood at the kitchen window, staring at the garden in full summer splendor, not quite seeing the blooms Elaine Archeron had tended these weeks, just staring and listening to that beautiful laugh, my mate's laugh. I rubbed a hand over my chest at that sound, the joy in it. Their conversation flitted past, falling back into old rhythms and yet close. We had all come so close to not seeing it again. This place, each other. And I knew that the laughter, it was in part because of that too, in defiance and gratitude.
You coming to drink, or are you just going to stare at the flowers all day?
Cassian's voice cut through the melody of sounds. I turned, finding him and Asriel in the kitchen doorway, each with a drink in hand. A second lay in Asriel's other scarred hand. He floated it over to me on a blue-tinged breeze. I clasped the cool, heavy crystal tumbler.
Sneaking up on your High Lord is ill-advised, I told them, drinking deeply.
The liquor burned its way down my throat, warming my stomach.
It's good to keep you on edge in your old age, Cassian said, drinking himself.
He leaned against the doorway.
Why are you hiding in here?
Asriel shot him a look, but I snorted, taking another sip.
You really did open the fancy bottles.
They waited. But Feyre's laugh sounded again, followed by Elaine's and Moore's. And when I dragged my gaze back to my brothers, I saw the understanding on their faces. It's real, Asriel said softly. Neither laughed or commented on the burning in my eyes. I took another drink to wash away the tightness in my throat and approached them.
Let's not do this again for... Another 500 years, I said a bit hoarsely, and clinked my glass against theirs.
Asriel cracked a smile as Cassian lifted a brow.
And what are we gonna do until then?
Beyond brokering peace, beyond those queens who were sure to be a problem, beyond healing our fractured world? Moore called for us, demanding we bring them a spread of food. An impressive one, she added, with extra bread. I smiled. Smiled wider as Feyre's laugh sounded again, as I felt it down the bond, sparkling brighter than the entirety of Starfall.
Until then, I said to my brothers, slinging my arm around their shoulders and leading them back to the sitting room.
I looked ahead toward that laugh, that light, and that vision of the future Feyre had shown me, more beautiful than anything I could have ever wished for. anything I had wished for, on those long-ago solitary nights with only the stars for company. A dream still unanswered, but not forever. Until then, we enjoy every heartbeat of it.
Chapter 82. Feyre. Rhysand was on the roof, the stars bright and low, the tiles beneath my bare feet still warm from the day's sun. He sat in one of those small iron chairs. No light, no bottle of liquor. Just him and the stars and the city. I slid into his lap and let him wrap his arms around me. We sat in silence for a long time. We'd barely had a moment alone in the aftermath of the battle, and had been too tired to do anything but sleep. But tonight... His hand ran down my thigh, bared with the way my nightgown had hitched. He startled when he actually looked at me, then huffed a laugh against my shoulder.
I should have known.
The shop ladies gave it to me for free, as thanks for saving them from Highburn. Maybe I should do it more often, if it gets me free lingerie. For I indeed wore that pair of red lacy underthings, beneath a matching red nightgown that was so scandalously sheer, it showed them off.
Hasn't anyone told you? You're disgustingly rich.
Just because I have money doesn't mean I need to spend it. He squeezed my knee.
Good. We need someone with a head for money around here. I've been bleeding out gold left and right thanks to our Court of Dreams taking advantage of my ridiculous generosity.
A laugh rumbled deep in my throat as I leaned my head back against his shoulder. Is Amryn still your second?
Our second.
Semantics. Rhys traced idle circles on my bare skin, along my knee and lower thigh.
If she wants it, it's hers.
Even if she doesn't have her powers anymore?
She's now High Fae. I'm sure she'll discover some hidden talent to terrorize us with.
I laughed again, savoring the feel of his hand on my skin, the warmth of his body around me.
I heard you,
he said softly.
When I was gone.
I began to tense at the lingering terror that had driven me from sleep these past few nights. The terror I doubted I'd soon recover from. Those minutes, I said, once he began making long, soothing strokes down my thigh. Rhys, I never want to feel that again.
Now you know how I felt under the mountain.
I craned my neck to look up at him. Never lie to me again. Not about that.
But about other things?
I pinched his arm hard enough that he laughed and batted away my hand.
I couldn't let all you ladies take the credit for saving us. Some male had to claim a bit of glory so you don't trample us until the end of time with your bragging.
I punched his arm this time. But he wrapped his arm around my waist and squeezed, breathing me in.
I heard you, even in death. It made me look back. Made me stay a little longer.
Before going to that place I had once tried to describe to the carver. When it's time to go there, I said quietly, we go together.
It's a bargain,
he said, and kissed me gently. I murmured back onto his lips, yes, it is. The skin on my left arm tingled. A lick of warmth snaked down it. I looked down to find another tattoo there. The twin to the one that had once graced it, save for that black band of the bargain I'd made with Bryaxis. He'd modified this one to fit around it, to be seamlessly integrated amid the whirls and swirls.
I missed the old one, he said innocently. On his own left arm, the same tattoo flowed, not to his fingers the way mine did, but rather from his wrist to his elbow.
Copycat, I said tartly.
It looks better on me.
Hmm.
He traced a line down my spine, then poked two spots along it. Sweetbriar axis has vanished. Do you know what that means? That I have to go hunt it down and put it back in the library?
Oh, you most certainly do.
I twisted in his lap, looping my arms around his neck as I said, And will you come with me on this adventure and all the rest? Rhys leaned forward and kissed me.
Always.
The stars seemed to burn brighter in response, creeping closer to watch. His wings rustled as he shifted us in the chair and deepened the kiss until I was breathless. And then I was flying. Rhys gathered me up in his arms, shooting us high into the starry night, the city a glimmering reflection beneath. Music flitted out from the riverfront cafes. People laughed as they walked arm in arm down the streets and across the bridges spanning the Sidra. Dark spots still stained some of the glimmering expanse, piles of rubble and ruined buildings, but even some of those had been lit up with small lights, candles, defiant and lovely against the blackness. We would need more of that in the days to come, on the long road ahead, to a new world, one I would leave a better place than how I'd found it. But for now, this moment, with the city below us, the world around us, savoring that hard-won peace, I savored it too, every heartbeat, every sound and smell and image that planted itself in my mind, so many that it would take me a lifetime, several of them, to paint. Rhys leveled out, sent a thought into my mind, and grinned broadly as I summoned wings. He let go of me, and I swept smoothly out of his arms, basking in the warm wind caressing every inch of me, drinking in the air laced with salt and citrus. It took me a few flaps to get it right, the feel and rhythm, but then I was steady, even. Then I was flying, soaring. Rhys fell into flight beside me, and when he smiled at me again as we sailed through the stars and the lights and the sea-kissed breeze, when he showed me all the wonders of Valaris, the glittering rainbow, a living river of color beneath us, when he brushed his wing against mine, just because he could, because he wanted to, and we'd have an eternity of nights to do this, to see everything together. A gift. All of it.
The End. This book was read for you by Amanda Lee Cobb, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you have enjoyed this production of A Court of Wings and Ruin by Sarah J. Maas. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more, so look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a